Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, I don't care how it works. I just care that it works. The timer is interesting. They're always like about 10 seconds off from each other. And I'm looking at my timer and it says, you know, show starts in 5 seconds. It's like, I got 12 seconds to go. What's going on here? Anyway, one of those little things that it's the great mysteries of the universe, the things that cause us to go, as Arsenio Hall used to say, for those of you who remember Arsenio Hall. Greg Penglis here. We're on the, the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River in downtown historic Milton, Florida, in the panhandle on the upper northwest corner, the upper left side, if you're looking at a map. It's probably the easiest way to find out. Gene, our fabulous producer, is here, Gene Verding. And we've got, waiting for Alan to give us a shout here, Alan Dawson, my tour guide friend from Belize, who's going to be calling in on the Skype line here any minute now. And so in the meantime, I can tell you what we're going to do. What I'm going to do today is scare the hell out of you. And the reason I want to do that is because you've all been sort of some of you are brainwashed, probably not listeners to this show because you know better. But the thing is, we're so overwhelmed with COVID that I'm looking at the net, looking on the internet last night. I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, if what else is out there? I looked up what are the deadliest, what are the top deadliest infectious diseases out there? And I found this article from 2018. We'll get to it in just a second. I might start it, until Alan gets here. I'll think of something else to do. But let's get Jean back online, check in with her, see if she has some news stories in the meantime, because I don't get stuck in the article just yet. Alan's only going to be here for about 30 minutes. And then so I figure at 6:30 Central Time, I'll get into this fascinating article I found. Jean, good morning. Are you bored, overwhelmed? Disgusted, totally just, are you done with all this COVID crap, especially the mild Omicron variant, which Biden calls Omicron?
Yeah, I mean, good morning. I really am. I'm tired of the masks. I'm tired of the fear-mongering. I was, in a patient's room yesterday or doing something, and they had, Biden talking, and Biden was saying he's not going to lock us down. He's not going to keep the kids from actually going to school in person. And I'm like, oh God, here we come. Because, every time he says something, he does the exact same opposite thereafter. But it's so sad that they're fear mongering. And he said that, made some comment about they successfully dealt with or handled the COVID, and then what was the next one? I forget the next one. And now we're on to this one. And he made it sound, and I could have interpreted it wrong, but that those were pretty much over. They dealt with them successfully, and now we're moving on.
Really? But how did they do that exactly?
He's not dealt with anything. it's just so crazy. But it's one thing, okay, people be cautious. Don't do anything stupid. Don't sit there and cough in front of someone without covering your mouth and wash your hands. I mean, washing your hands is the best thing you can do anyway. But it's like, stop the fear mongering. It's sad. And the reason I say that, he didn't fear monger last year when Trump was in office. Actually he did. He told, Trump that he was, I forget what the term was, when he closed down or wouldn't allow China to come in here and stuff like that. So it's just ridiculous, just absolutely ridiculous. And that, but yeah, it's like the American people, people that haven't been awoken a long time ago, more are waking up. And just like the vaccine. Oh, get the vaccine. And now I was looking at something and they said now because of this new virus, people that haven't gotten the vaccine are going into. I'm like, are you kidding me? The new strain of it, whatever. That makes no sense because the vaccine's not even going to cover that.
Didn't cover Delta either.
No,
hasn't covered any variant. It's created them. Yeah.
But I did see something yesterday. I did not read the article, but they're linking the virus to more cancers now. So isn't that great? What is it? Not even a year into it.
You mean the vaccine to more cancers, not the virus.
No, not the virus. Yeah. The vaccine. You're right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I misspoke.
That's okay.
And then what was it? What is it? One of them, a judge allowed that 500 pages a day be released into deal. Was it with Pfizer or something? They said it's still going to take, I don't know how many years, because there's like 300 and some thousand pages of document already. It's like, so we're never going to know the truth for yeah. Like they said, 2076, that's probably about right. We're all going to be dead, but the people that got the vaccine are more likely to be dead. And unfortunately, if they had children, those mm-hmm. poor children, you don't know on a chromosomal anatomical level what's going to happen.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about. Pfizer asked a judge to not have to release any information. They said even if – I'm not sure exactly the story because I didn't look at it for a bit. But I think they said even if they released 500 pages a day, it would still take years to get all the information out there. Well, in that case, why don't you just provide us a summary? You know, why don't you cut to the chase? I mean, nobody reads the entire text of bills. Do you think that – I mean, nobody in Congress reads those 5,000-page, you know, piles of BS. We know that because, you know, as Nancy Pelosi said, you know, you have to pass it to see what's in it. Well, isn't that special? Well, it's the same
thing
here.
You have
to approve it before you can see what's in the data. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, should we buy cars before we see them? I don't think so. You know, so this is the problem. So I don't know the exact. You can look it up. We got some time here. So like I say, I'm hoping that I've already messaged Alan. Hopefully he'll get this and join us pretty quickly. If not, I got a bunch of stories. So let me get into something before we get into the really scary diseases out there that I found. And this is on what just happened with this budget bill. Let me see if I can find where's my budget bill. Way to go! I moved stuff around just before I came on the air. I should probably stop doing that. All right. So Center for Immigration Studies, and this is one of my favorite folks. In fact, I had a disagreement with somebody on Facebook. Said that this was a terrorist group, and Southern Poverty Law Center was an honorable institution. I thought, what? No, I think you got it backwards, pal. Anyway, so I stopped arguing with Facebook people. So Center for Immigration Studies published this on December 2nd. So this is before – I think this is before the vote was taken last night on their little stopgap measure. This latest thing to avoid a government shutdown. Every time they're pressured to avoid a government shutdown, the Democrats put in crap into the bill, and the geldings vote for it because, well, they don't want to be seen as obstructionists. They don't want the liberal media to characterize them as racist and, you know, anti-American, whatever else they're going to call them. Doesn't matter. Anyway, the geldings are geldings. They have a cane. They don't need to be the geldings. Not $1 to the gelding GOP until they start disqualifying Biden electors. And that's going to be the cue that they're serious about the election. Until they start disqualifying Biden electors, they're not serious. And I'm not, you know, nobody should give them even a dollar. And when I get 10 million listeners, what's that? Did I hear what?
They said that there's one, I don't know who it is, in Wisconsin is trying to take back the electoral votes.
Oh, sheriff's already said there's grounds for arrest. But, you know, the district attorney's not prosecuting. So, again, geldings. And I think that's part of George Soros' DA. But whatever it is, they're not prosecuting. They're not going through with it. And the Republican Party failing to have their daily press conference, their daily election correction report, as I've been preaching forever, ever since the November 3rd election. You know, we used to do the election correction report, but now there's not much correction going on, so there's nothing much to report. That's the problem. You know, the days are clicking away. We've got 22 months. So they have from November until September of 2022 to get all this stuff done. After that, it won't matter. But I have a feeling they're going to wimp out, hope for the best, have the election stolen from them again in 2022, and then they'll come back and say, well, we'll get them in 2024. At that point, you know, anybody who's still registered a Republican is an idiot. But I hopefully, you know, can encourage people now to unregister as a Republican, send the message that you're not satisfied with them, tell them you're happy to re-register as soon as they start, you know, canceling and disqualifying Biden electors, and let's get the ongoing investigation over. See, the Brandon insurrection is still under an ongoing investigation, and as such, shouldn't be allowed to do anything. But that's just me. That's how I'd handle it. You know, and those are the talking points I'd give. And we'll get into that more as we get a bigger and bigger show. New website coming out possibly today, certainly over the weekend. And by Monday, I'll have a nice new report on our brand new website. All right, so let me get to the Center for Immigration Studies. This is December 2nd, right before the vote was taken. And this is by Robert Law. And he says, a potential federal government shutdown is looming. Well, it's already been solved for now. This is back when we still had hope. he said, is looming with funding currently set to run out at 11:59 on December 3rd. That would have been tonight. So they've already voted on this. I guess they voted on it last night. He says, to avert a shutdown, House Democrats just introduced a bill that would temporarily extend government funding through February 18th. But instead of a, quote, clean bill, as someone sees, the Democrats always insist on that. When the Republicans had the House, Democrats said, you have to have a clean bill, which in other words, it includes all the crap that they already had put in the budget, all right, instead of taking out things that we don't need. So Republicans would never do that. So now a Democrat idea of a clean bill is all the extra stuff they want to put in. It's just, I mean, hypocrisy knows no bounds. You know, the Marxist Democrats behave hypocrisy is a virtue is kind of how this works out. Anyway, this is the key part. This bill includes additional funding toward the visa-less Afghans, the Brandon insurrection allowed into the country after he's calling it the botched Afghanistan withdrawal. I call it the Biden surrender. As framed by the House Appropriations Committee Chair Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, DECON, sounds like a pest remover. Anyway, the continuing resolution includes virtually no changes to existing funding or policy anomalies. However, Democrats prevailed to include, are you ready, $7 billion for Afghan, they're now calling them evacuees. They're not even calling them refugees anymore. He says, this short press release is notable for two reasons. First, DeLauro's use of Afghan evacuees implicitly concedes that the unvetted, in other words, we don't know who they are, Afghan population allowed into the country, I would say by Obama, are not refugees, as the administration and the media, you know, allies originally claimed. Additionally, the press release omits any breakdown of how the $7 billion in taxpayer dollars will be allocated. Combined, the $7 billion will be allocated to the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, State Department, in support of Operation Allies Welcome. In other words, that's the resettlement of Muslim, you know, old Muslim men and their five-year-old wives into our country to basically dilute the population of American patriots and those who believe in the Constitution. That's what that's all about. He says, my colleague Nyla Rush has a written comprehensive piece on the operation. Yeah, okay. In examining who exactly was on the planes. Okay, so maybe we'll get that next time. Anyway, I'm going to skip the DOD stuff and some of the other things that are going on. But here's some of the worst ones. DOS, I guess the Department of State, receives little more than $1.2 billion. This is extra money, folks, beyond their regular budget. $1.2 billion, all of which remains available until spent. The bill gives exactly $1.2 billion for the United States Emergency Refugee and Migration Assistance Fund. Well, there's a hell of a difference between refugees and migrants. First of all, migrants are generally people that come here for work and go home. A refugee is coming here because they're persecuted in their own country, and then they probably get killed or in prison for life or tortured if they stayed there. Neither of which applies to the Afghan goat herders that were brought in, you know, by the Obama resettlement campaign. Anyway, they call it Operation Allies Welcome Support, including additional relocations of individuals at risk. What the hell does that mean? Everybody in Afghanistan is at risk. They're run by the Taliban. Anyway, the remainder goes to diplomatic programs. Da, da, da. Okay. Also hidden in the bill, this is the part that really disgusted me, is $1.6 billion allocated for unaccompanied alien children. In other words, you know, illegal alien kids that their parents, you know, shipped off to be anchor babies, you know, here in this country. Hopefully the rest of the family will come in. And it says they're calling them UACs, unaccompanied alien children, who illegally cross the southern border. This money is available through September 30th, 2024. And its intended purpose is disguised in legislative language that says, quote, for the account specified and for the activities specified in Section 141 of this act. Combined, Democrats are poised to put taxpayers on the hook for $8.6 billion to address parts of insurrectionist Biden's border mess. By comparison, the state of Delaware's entire yearly budget in 2022 is roughly $4.7 billion, or $3.9 billion less. Anyway, so this is the problem. They're giving $1.6 billion to bring in illegal alien kids, you know, and if American parents abandon their kids like illegal alien, like foreign nationals are abandoning their kids to become illegal aliens here, those parents would be arrested. Their kids would be taken for child abuse. You can't just abandon your kids, and yet we're taking in abandoned kids. No, we should have a program returning to their parents, and especially because we want to keep families together. Anyway, I was disgusted by this, and I just wanted to get that particular thing off my chest because it's not being reported in the news. No one's telling you that this little funding bill has a whole bunch of extra stuff in it to help illegal aliens and the Obama resettlement program of Muslims into our country. All right. Excuse me. There we go. Couldn't find the mute button in time. Let me play a little my favorite Biden piece. And then I'm going to come back with, like I said, there's no longer a gallon joining us. So let me play you something else here in a little bit, and I'll be right back with the worst diseases out there. COVID isn't one of them.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
All right, let me see if I have a comment from Gene on the extra money being spent that nobody else told you about. Well, I found it actually a couple of places. There was, where is it, the Washington Examiner, I think, or one of the things. No, Washington Times reported it. That's where I first found this. But the problem is Washington Times, unless you pay for a subscription, I can't read you that article. So fortunately, for those of us that don't have a fortune to spend on every subscription out there, there's usually another news agency that picks up whatever the big story is from the big papers that want all your money. And they should, you know, they're advertising, so that's supposed to pay for their budget. But anyway, that's how that goes. So, Gene, what do you think? You want $1.6 billion to pay for kids to illegally come in the country and water down our nation with illegal aliens, plus the rest of their families are going to show up later? We know how that works.
Yeah, I think it's very sad, especially when you consider we still have people over there that are trying to get home. But nothing has been said about that in months.
Yeah. Well,
why don't they use some of that money to get them home? And what a joke.
You know, well, it's a resettlement program.
Soldiers here that don't get anything when they get hurt, killed. I mean, look at the little money they get. And these guys come over here illegally. It's like, okay, give them some monies to help them get on their feet, whatever. But the thing is, it's just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, see, my approach is more Machiavellian. Take the Afghans back, bring the Americans home. These 100,000 people shouldn't be here. You know, so my simple solution would be just to send it back, you know, and then do what everybody else does in the world.
Yeah.
Go to a consulate, you know, apply to come here. And if you want to be a refugee, that's okay. You can apply for refugee status, but that means you go to the next country, which would be Pakistan. So any Afghani who is having problems should be in Pakistan, not here. You know, that's how refugees work. You go to the first available country that can host you. And that's how it works. So the only people who should be coming to the United States as refugees are Mexicans and Canadians, neither of which are what I call an oppressed nation at this point. So we shouldn't really have any refugees. Anyway, let me get to this article I found here. It's from CBS News, which I find fascinating. The best articles on COVID are the ones that were written early in 2020. So by the time they started cooking the books in July of 2020, after COVID had the alpha strain really had died out until they brought it back with the lockdowns and masks. But before that, they wrote some really good articles. And this is one of them. This is from April 2nd of 2020. Jessica Leirish, L-E-A-R-I-S-H, from CBS News of all places. So the news did a good report here. Deadliest infectious diseases in the world ranked. Okay. Now this is right when COVID was starting. You know, actually April was the worst of COVID. April 15th was the peak of the COVID deaths. Okay, because the most vulnerable, they didn't know enough about it, and these were the folks that were being most affected. So the article starts, COVID-19 has spread to nearly every corner of the earth, save Antarctica, forcing border closures and stay-at-home orders and triggering a global economic downturn. Okay, this is before they knew how bad it was. They said the latest U.S. government estimate is that between 100,000 and 240,000 Americans could die from the dangerous respiratory infection before the pandemic is brought under control. This is pretty optimistic considering the almost 800,000 people that have died with COVID and only a fraction who've died from COVID because the lies are just horrible. Anyway, it says it's still too early to know the mortality rate for this coronavirus. All right. Now, it says around the world, testing supplies remain inadequate. U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the corrupt folks that brought you the propaganda, says about 25% of the people infected with the virus may exhibit no symptoms at all. Well, yeah, that was actually a good thing to say. All right, so the point is they didn't know how bad it was, but we know now that the mortality rate of COVID is less than 1%. In fact, it's much less than 1%, depending on how young you are. If you're under 18, it's statistically zero. It's like less than 0.999%. you know, or so that'd be like 0.0001%. So it's like 1,000 of a percent of your a young person. Anyway, so I thought to myself, self, what are the really dangerous diseases out there? And I found this article that ranked them from 50 to 1. So we're going to go through these. And you know, and Gene, if you want to take a guess, any place along the way, what you think are some of the most, you know, dangerous diseases, and what you, if you want to make a comment, feel free. All right, so here we go. Measles, number 50. All right, mortality rate, 1.46%, which makes it at least double COVID. You know, considering, yeah, for various, actually more than double COVID for most people. So measles is more deadly than COVID. Ever hear about that in the news? No, of course not. It says in 2019, there were 1,282 cases of measles in 31 states, mostly among unvaccinated people. Well, okay, fine. That was the largest number of cases in the U.S. in more than a quarter century. Yeah, see, there's this big vaccine thing. Of course, the people that got it don't get it anymore. You know, so it's a very interesting thing. It says recent studies have shown that measles can do more harm beyond the symptoms of the acute illness. All right, scientists believe that the measles virus actually causes a person's immune system to forget previously built up resistances to other unrelated infections. That's a good reason to either cure it, prevent it, or get over it early. Number 49, Lassa fever. Never heard of this one. Mortality rate, 1.67%. This viral hemorrhagic fever spreads through contact with mouse excrement or from one infected person to another. It is treated with antiviral drug ribavirin. I've never heard of ribavirin. Anyway, so hemorrhagic means it bleeds. Okay, mortality rate 1.67%, or way more than COVID. Lassa fever outbreak in Nigeria. It looks like they had one in 2020 in Nigeria. 100 people died. 48, rabbit fever. Never heard of this one either. Mortality rate 2%, way beyond COVID. Rabbit fever, also known as tularemia, is primarily spread by tick and fly bites. Symptoms include fever, skin ulcers, and enlarged lymph nodes. Left untreated, this disease kills 15% of infected individuals. Wow. HIV/AIDS, number 47. HIV is most often spread through sexual activity or sharing drug needles. Antiviral medications can help keep it in check and reduce the risk of transmission. Here, members of a fraternity at the University of Philippines, Manila, participated. Oh, okay, but it's a different story. Huh, that is a different story. I'm not going to tell you. Yeah, all right. Number 46, larval tapeworm infection. This is going to get really disgusting. So I not only is this going to be fearful, it's also really awful. Larval tapeworm infection, mortality rate, 2.2%. Again, way more than COVID. Cysticercosis is a parasitic tissue infection caused by tapeworm. Tapeworm larvae. The disease is spread through contact with waste from an infected person. Yeah, that's like that's how you get polio. You know, fecal bacteria. Okay, so stay out of swimming pools that don't have chlorine. Get better sewer systems. And of course, if you're really in desperate shape, you know, well, I'm not going to talk about the vaccination that came along later. Here's another one: rotavirus, number 45 on our top 50. Mortality rate 2.4%. Rotavirus is the most common cause of severe diarrhea in infants and young children. There is a vaccine available. This is really pro-vaccine, okay, because they were sort of leading you to the COVID vaccine. Number 44, influenza. That's H.influenza. I take that this is the flu. Mortality rate, 2.45%. This bacteria can cause many kinds of illnesses from ear infections to blood infections, but it does not cause the flu despite the name. Okay, so it's not the flu. It's a bacteria. Flu is a virus, two totally different organisms. But that's number 44. Mortality rate, 2.45%. In other words, way above COVID. Cholera, number 42. This one I do have heard of. Mortality rate, 4%. Wow, four times COVID or more. Cholera, an infection that causes severe diarrhea and dehydration, is very rare in the developed world. It is almost always fatal if left untreated. There was an outbreak of cholera in the Democratic Republic of the Congo in January 2020. Typhoid, number 42. Mortality rate, 4%. This bacterial infection is often spread through contaminated food and drinking water. In refugee camps like this, they have a picture of one in Syria, rain can flood waste pits and contaminate the drinking water supply. I imagine those are also known as latrines. Anyway, without treatment, 30% of those infected will die. Okay, these are the really bad diseases. I mean, COVID, you compare COVID to any of these diseases, typhoid, cholera, these really disgusting, horrible diseases. And COVID's not even close. And we're only talking about a mortality rate of 4%. Okay, COVID's less than 1%. So you're being scared of all the wrong things. Now, granted, these other diseases are rare, but they're still out there. Okay, number 40, Shiga toxin producing E. coli, and that's T-I-E. Okay, we've all heard of E. coli. That's colon bacteria. You know when you have that romaine lettuce problem? That's what this stuff is. Mortality rate, 5%. This dangerous form of E. coli is most often spread by contaminated food products. Okay, so you got more to worry about from your food than from random COVID viruses floating around in the atmosphere. Here's another one. TIE, I'm not sure what that stands for. Louse-borne relapsing fever. They get this from a louse. That's lousy. I guess that's where the term louse comes from. Lousy comes from louse. Mortality rate, 5%. This disease, most commonly seen in Northeast Africa, is spread by lice and results in high fever, chills, and joint pain. Among other symptoms, between 10 and 40% of infected people die in the absence of treatment. So when they give a mortality rate of 4 or 5%, and then you hear like 40 or 50% of people are dying without treatment, I'm pretty much guessing, and I bet you I'm right, that the mortality rates are based on treatment, okay, based on timely treatment. And so the mortality rate for COVID, I'm sure a lot of that's based on not getting treatment, because people are going to the hospitals, getting remdesivir, having their lungs flooded with fluid, trying to blast it back out with a ventilator, and they're dying at a rate of 97% of those who received that treatment. So the COVID rate might be actually way lower than we think. Well, we know it's way lower, because the stats are still coming out that somewhere between 96 to 97% of the people that die, as listed up with COVID, died with it, not from it. Only about 5 to 6% of people actually died from it, which means somewhere between 20 and 30,000 people we're talking about have actually died from COVID and nothing else. All right. Wheels disease, W-E-I-L apostrophe S. Wheels disease, number 39 on the hit parade. Mortality rate, 5.72%. Now we're getting serious. Though extremely rare in the developed world, approximately 1 million people contract this blood infection annually, also known as leptospirosis. Leptospirosis. Yep, I never was good at Latin. It's spread through contact with animal urine, often in water or soil. Yeah, farmers out there, great. Severe cases of Wheels disease can lead to bleeding in the lungs or kidney failure. Here's another familiar one, yellow fever. This is what killed all the workers who built the Panama Canal. Yellow fever, mortality rate 6%. This mosquito-borne illness got its name from the jaundiced skin, hair, and nails of infected people suffering from liver failure. Without medical treatment, 50% of infected people died. In 2018, there was an epidemic of yellow fever in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and they're saying they closed parks to prevent further infection. Here's an interesting one, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, number 37. All right. Mortality rate, 7%. All right. This tick-borne bacterial disease is not limited to the Rocky Mountains. It occurs in many states and most commonly reported in North Carolina, Tennessee, Missouri, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, states that aren't too far from me in Florida. Symptoms include fever, body aches, and a spotted rash, hence Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Gene, you keeping up with all this? Are you finding this interesting? I found this fascinating. I'm just doing a little
bit. Yeah, it really is interesting.
Yeah. The article's on my Facebook page. I'll put it in the Action Radio group page. But anybody that wants to look this up, it's right here. It is CBS News, deadliest infectious diseases in the world ranked. Jessica Learish, April 2nd of 2020, 2:51 p.m. if you really want to get specific. Now let's get back to going through my diseases again. All right, where's 37? 37, number 37, 38 yellow fever, 37 Rocky Mountain spotted fever, I did that one. Number 36, Zika. Yeah, we know that in Florida from the mosquitoes. Mortality rate, 8.3%. Adults rarely die from this mosquito-transmitted disease. More than 8% of babies born from infected mothers die from complications. That's bad. Of microcephaly or abnormally small head circumference. Ooh, geez, that sounds horrible. Zika mosquitoes in the U.S., and it says there have been no reported mosquito-borne Zika cases in Florida. This is mosquito-borne cases of Zika in the United States since 2017. That year, 7 people were infected by mosquitoes in the U.S., 5 in Texas, and 2 in Florida. Most Zika patients in the United States got the disease while traveling abroad. Number 35, the plague. Here we go. I was wondering when this was going to show up. Number 35, the plague. Mortality rate, 9%. In the 14th and 15th centuries, around half of Europe's population was wiped out by this contagious bacterial infection. While modern medicine has driven the plague's mortality rate down significantly, outbreaks of plague still happen. In 2017, the World Health Organization, the WHO, warned of an outbreak in Madagascar. All right. Number 31, diphtheria. And that's where it comes from. You remember your DTP shots, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, that were just whooping cough? Okay, this is one of those diseases we're all vaccinated for as kids, back when I think the vaccines were a lot safer. Mortality rate, 10%. Diphtheria is, it can remember, COVID is less than 1%. In fact, for most people, it's much less than 1%. Okay, so we're talking over 10 times the mortality rate for diphtheria over COVID. Just to keep this in perspective, diphtheria is a contagious respiratory infection. Well, that should sound familiar. Spread by bacteria in a cough or a sneeze. It is particularly dangerous to children. In Indonesia, where outbreaks are common, they've got students waiting nervously before vaccinations. Okay, there are pictures associated with this article. So that's why you see me kind of going, oh, wait a minute. You can't see the picture on radio. Number 31, botulism. Okay, now the way to tell if botulism's in your can, if you ever see, in fact, I had a science teacher bring a can in that was botulism infected. The can is expanding. It's round at the top and round at the bottom because the bacteria are excreting gas. That gas inflates the can. So if you ever see a can that is abnormally round, where it should be flat on the top and the bottom, throw it out immediately. It's got botulism. All right. Mortality rate, 10%. Botulism infections are rare but potentially fatal. Bacteria enter the body through improperly processed foods, there we go, or through an open wound and produce a dangerous neurotoxin. Symptoms of botulism include weakness, blurred vision, and muscle paralysis. That's why they use it in Botox. It paralyzes your muscles and you don't look so wrinkled. Are you folks sure you want to take Botox? Let me ask you, let me bring Gene into the conversation here, because this is Botox, and they give us this nice name, right? Botox, but it's really botulism toxin. It's a neurotoxin that's fatal if it's not done properly. Why the hell are people injecting this into their wrinkles? Gene, help me out here.
Because people want to get rid of their wrinkles. I know a lot of people that do that. Yeah.
Are there any long-term, in fact, if you want to do a little research study on this, I'd be curious. Are there any long-term dangerous effects of Botox?
Well, they use Botox for medical things.
Hmm. But it really is
for
botulism,
tone and
right?
stuff like that. Yes.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. I was curious. I need to learn more about this, but
it
I'm not going to take a shot.
Yeah, I know people that use it for wrinkles.
Folks, keep your wrinkles. I mean, they add character to your face. You know, you've earned them. It's like gray hair. I've earned my gray hair, every one of them. I'm not going to get rid of them. I'm proud of them. But that's just me. Number 31, Legionnaire's disease. Yeah, I remember this is something that affected a couple of cruise ships really badly. Legionnaire's disease is an atypical pneumonia spread by inhaling mist from bacteria-ridden water. So they must have bad water on these ships. All right, next one, Legionnaire's disease. They had an outbreak in Flint, Michigan. Oh, that was interesting. An outbreak killed at least 12 people in Flint in 2014 and 2015. Science alleged that low chlorine levels in the city's municipal water supply were to blame. Yeah, chlorine kills polio, kills bacteria, kills viruses. Chlorine is really good stuff, okay? They put too much in the pools, I think, sometimes. But anyway, that's it. Here's another familiar one, anthrax. Number 31, mortality rate, 10%. This illness became a household name in 2001 when letters containing anthrax spores were mailed to news media and to two U.S. senators. Five people died. The most common way anthrax is spread, however, is through contact with infected animals or animal products. In 2019, at least 10 buffalo died from an outbreak in Kenya. All right, so let's get. Looks like Pianki's on the line now. I'm going to bring him on here, and then I'll continue my run through the 50 most deadly diseases. Pianki, what do you think?
Well, I tell you one thing: that rabbit fever is for real, because if you hunt rabbit hunting season is usually in the fall, but you want to. If it's real warm in September and October,
mm-hmm.
and you haven't had enough time for that cold to kill the ticks on the rabbits, they bite them in the neck,
mm-hmm.
and you have this protrusion, a purple protrusion. And if you get that on you, you can catch a rabbit fever.
Yeah, see, I never heard of that because I haven't had rabbits yet, but, you know, it'd be interesting. Now, if you cook the rabbits properly, does that also kill the ticks? Or no?
Well, yeah, it should, but you got to clean it.
Right.
You got to gut them and clean it. In that process, you're very vulnerable.
Okay, interesting. All right. Well, let me continue here. 29, SARS. We all heard about that. We heard of SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2. This is the real SARS, not the one that was manufactured that was sent out. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, is a strain of coronavirus. See, there we go. That reached epidemic levels in 2003, infecting more than 8,000 people in 29 countries and killing 774. And so we have another nice little picture there. Here's the number 29, monkeypox. Never heard of this one. Mortality rate 11%. Okay, we've broken the 10% barrier. We're getting more serious now. The monkeypox virus is most often spread through contact with the bodily fluids of an infected animal through human-to-human transmission as possible. It occurs most often in rainforests of Central and West Africa. People suffering from the virus will experience fever and swollen lymph nodes, followed by a rash that concentrates on the face and extremities. Toxic shock syndrome. Okay, this is number 28. All right, now this is something that this isn't a virus or a bacteria, or it's a bacteria caused by this one. You know, and you would think that something number 28 with a mortality rate of 12% would be more common knowledge than COVID, but that's not the case. Toxic shock syndrome. Toxic shock is a dangerous bacterial infection most commonly associated with the use of tampons, but it also occurs in other settings such as post-surgical infections, burns, and catheters. Rapid diagnosis and antibiotic treatment is the key to reducing mortality. Here's another one, 27, Guillain-Barre syndrome. This is what's showing up now because of these COVID GMO shots, right? Genetically modified, I'm going to say mRNA, COVID GMO shots. I'm going to keep going, Pianki, so if you want to jump in, just feel free to jump in.
That's Guillain-Barre.
Guillain-Barre, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, appreciate it. Mortality rate, 13%. 13 times, at least, you know, 13 times greater than COVID. In fact, much more so with less than 1% COVID. The exact cause of Guillain-Barre syndrome is unknown. We know one of the causes now. Of course, this was written back in 2020, so they wouldn't have made the connection yet. The disorder causes the immune system to attack the nervous system. Scientists have linked cases to the presence of other pathogens like the Zika virus and influenza. Well, yeah, I bet you COVID spike protein has a big effect on that also, right?
And I've worked with people that have gotten the flu shot, and right after it, shortly thereafter, got Guillain-Barre. So just be cautious.
Wow. So why is the flu shot even out there allowed? You know, I mean, this is, of course, money. What am I saying, Greg? You know, but yeah, and this is, so it's related to the flu shot. It's certainly related to the COVID GMO shot.
Right.
Interesting. Yep. Number 26, tetanus. Mortality rate, 13.2%.
Wow.
Yeah. Fun fact, that old story that tetanus is caused by stepping on rusty nails is not altogether accurate. Rust does not cause tetanus. Rusty objects are often found outdoors where bacteria live. And while the rough, porous rust does provide a convenient habitat for dangerous bacteria, you can also contact tetanus from a nail with no rust at all, or from an animal bite. It is the low oxygen environment under the skin that provides the perfect breeding ground for dangerous toxins. Tetanus vaccines are widely available. Of course, I always say that. Meningococcal meningitis, number 24. All right. Mortality rate, 15%. We're moving up the chain here of mortality, folks. All right. So this is greater than 15 times more dangerous than COVID. All right. So meningococcal meningitis. Excuse my pronunciations. Gene, feel free to help me out here. This is a severe bacterial infection of the thin layer of tissue that surrounds the brain. Oh, great. Untreated, 50% of infected people die. Tuberculosis, number 24. Mortality rate, 15%. Tuberculosis causes respiratory symptoms like a severe cough with occasional blood. It is curable, but it remains one of the top 10 causes of death globally, still to this day. Rye syndrome. I think that's aspirin associated. I read these all last night, but you know, I can't remember them all. 23. Rye syndrome. Mortality rate, 20%. Ooh. The exact cause of this severe brain disease is not known, but it often occurs in children recovering from a virus like chickenpox, especially if aspirin was administered. Yeah, that's what I knew. There was an aspirin connection. This correlation led to warnings against aspirin use in children in the 1970s and 80s, when children's aspirin use declined. So did instances of Rye syndrome. Someone want to comment on that? I thought I heard.
I heard that.
Tuberculosis
was brought to the Western Hemisphere by dolphins coming from the southern end of Africa.
By dolphins?
Yes.
Dolphins. And how exactly was the dolphin to human transition?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. The flipper used to kiss his handler, so I don't know.
You know, that's true. They made us do that in Puerto Vallarta when I swam with the dolphins. We got to kiss the dolphins. But I don't think we're that involved. I don't know if we were close enough to get Rye syndrome. No, which one are we talking about?
Yeah, the dolphins dolphins have they mammals. They have lungs, so maybe it was that way. You were on Rye syndrome.
Interesting. Okay. Well, okay. I'm not kissing any more dolphins. It was fun once, you know. But how did we get onto that? Oh, God. I was in such a serious mood, too. All right, I'll have to watch the dolphin transmission. Next time I'll just hug. 18, smallpox. Mortality rate, 30%. Smallpox causes severe flu-like symptoms in addition to a rash and large lesions on mucous membranes. The disease was declared globally eradicated in 1979, and administration of the vaccine was halted. Yeah, so, but, yeah, and this is the thing they're worried about is if the the bio-warfare globalists want to bring back a disease, you know, to kill off half the population of the world, that's one of the ones that is rumored that they're doing it. I'm not holding a whole lot of you know, stock in that just yet. I think that the globalists would want more people to do more work for them, but that's just me. I always think these people think selfishly, but that's another one. Here's one, Gene, you might be able to comment on. Staphylococcus aureus, number 18, mortality rate 30%. This would be a staph infection. Are notoriously difficult to treat, especially the antibiotic resistant strain known as MRSA. I had a friend who had this, got it in a hospital. This is one of the great untold stories of hospitals. The staph infections, right? And MRSA, Gene.
Very popular. Yes.
How common
is
it?
We had a county executive, a St. Louis County executive, Buzz Westfall, died from that
staph infection
some years ago. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I sort of keep my hospital things to a minimum, you know, necessary, checks and emergencies and, of course, open heart surgery. So, I don't want to do that again just because of, if we think about all the possibilities of what can happen, it gets pretty bad. Here's another one. Number 18, invasive listeria. Mortality rate, 30%. Listeriosis, the illness caused by the listeria bacteria, is primarily transmitted through contaminated foods. I've heard of this. Listeria is particularly dangerous for pregnant women and the elderly. In 2011, 33 people died from eating listeria-contaminated cantaloupe. Wow. Number 18, Eastern equine encephalitis. Now, I didn't know it was Eastern, but I've certainly heard of equine encephalitis. Mortality rate, 30%. In other words, greater than 30 times more deadly than COVID. All right. This rare brain infection is spread by mosquitoes and affects both humans and animals. Survivors often suffer from ongoing neurological problems. Well, that do have that in common with the COVID GMO
shots.
That's
the crazy disease.
Equine encephalitis, yes, from horses or equine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything more you want to say on that? Because I'm not that familiar with this one.
No, what you're reading off there is just is astounding, man. It's something else people don't realize.
Yeah,
that the bamboozlement that's going on.
You know, one thing I found about investigating for the show, the real secret to investigating is to ask the right question. The information is out there. It's like when I asked the question, what else kills viruses? Because and this is back in February of 2020 when Dr. Fascist was just cranking up his propaganda. And he was saying, well, we have to have vaccines. And I'm like, well, the disease is already here. Why do you want that? Vaccines are preventive, not a cure. All right. And so I thought to myself, well, let's do something real short term. Let's find a cure. Let's see what kills the virus. And that's when I had that whole show on March 2nd on all the various ways that viruses can be killed by other viruses, by drugs and viruses, by drugs by themselves, by laser targeting drugs that help viruses kill other viruses. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that kill viruses and they weren't even looking into them. And this is why in February of 2020, way before anything else was going on, I wrote a bill that Congress has to spend half its money on cures and only half on vaccines. And had we done that, we'd be in a hell of a lot better shape. Here's one for you. Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, number 18. Mortality rate, 30%. The virus is spread several ways. Tick bites, contact with animal blood, and close contact with an infected person. Flu-like symptoms. Have you noticed that common thing? A lot of these are flu-like symptoms. And irritability progress to liver failure, kidney deterioration, and pulmonary failure. That's your lungs. No, that's your heart, right? Pulmonary is heart, or is it lungs? Gene?
Cardio's heart,
pulmonary's lungs. Okay, good. There we go. All right, here's another one. I've never heard of this one. 17, invasive. It's going to get worse, folks. I mean, we're heading for the top, nastiest diseases on the planet. Invasive aspergillosis. Mortality rate, 30.22%. We got an x-ray here of the lungs of an infected person. It's a dangerous fungus called aspergillus. This infection, which primarily affects people with poor immune systems, is 100% fatal if left untreated. Ever heard of it?
No.
Aspergillosis, it's a fungus. And you look at the picture of this lung in this article, it's totally gone. It's really scary.
Yeah, I believe it.
Number 16, Vibrio illness. Never heard of this one. Mortality rate, 34.16%. Vibrio illness is related to cholera, which is a disease we mentioned earlier. It's a waterborne disease. It is usually contracted from eating contaminated seafood. Well, there you go. The bacteria can cause sepsis and wound infections that require amputation. So if you get this, you're going to lose something. Seafood. Yeah, I'm more a fish person than a seafood person. The older I get, the less I'm inclined to, go for clam scallops, oysters, things like that. Well, I'm not an oyster fan anyway. But unless it's cooked, I'm not really big on raw seafood anymore just because of – I've heard some horror stories.
Yeah, raw cooked seafood can get you, man. Oyster slapping and all that stuff, that's dangerous.
Yeah, that includes
– I tell you something else is dangerous, too, is seaweed. Seaweed is dangerous, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
How come?
Pardon me?
It's supposed to have iodine in it. Why is seaweed dangerous?
Well, if you don't cook it, because some people have a tendency to want to eat it raw. It has to be cooked because it comes out of the ocean where everything is.
Yeah. Yeah, cooking saved more lives. You know, it's interesting. If you look at the Civil War, this is where they discovered that soldiers that drank coffee, survived a lot better than soldiers that did not. And what they figured out long after the war, it wasn't the coffee. It was the fact that they boiled water to make it. So boiling water kills a ton of parasites, amoeba, and other nasty things that are in the water. And so, there's something, we human beings are vulnerable to a lot of things. And so simple precautions like cooking, I love scallops. There's a great restaurant in San Francisco. I forgot the name of it. They used to have this clam pasta scallop dish that was unbelievable. But they were cooked. It's like, I didn't mind. Okay, cook your seafood, folks. Just a precaution. MERS, number 15. Mortality rate, 34.4%. Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. This is one of the ones I think they cooked up in the lab with SARS, okay? You got SARS, MERS, and SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2. So as far as I'm concerned, these are manufactured diseases. Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, is a coronavirus, there you go, that originated in Saudi Arabia in 2012. Since then, intermittent outbreaks have been reported across 27 countries, including a 2015 outbreak in Thailand. Gee, when did the Wuhan lab crank up? Sometime around 2012, maybe? Just a guess. Here's one I've heard of.
A convenient place, isn't it?
What's that now?
It's a convenient place for it to occur, isn't it?
Isn't that interesting? It occurred in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. What did Saudi Arabia do to China? We should look up the world events and see what happened, but I bet you that's part of it. All right, here's one. Hantavirus, pulmonary syndrome. You guys heard of hantavirus? I'm 14.
No.
Mortality rate, 36%. This rare but dangerous cardiopulmonary disease, that's heart, is spread by deer mice. Deer mice? In 2012, 10 campers staying in Yosemite's Camp Curry contracted hantavirus. Three of them died. The camp was later demolished. Here's one that's really scary that I had no idea about. Raccoon roundworm, number 13. Okay, mortality rate, 38.46%. It's Baylisa scariasis. Baylisa scariasis. It's a parasitic infection caused by raccoon roundworm larvae. In other words, these larvae are penetrating your brain, folks, okay? It most often affects young children who encounter raccoon excrement while playing outdoors. Stay away from the raccoons, folks. You do not want raccoon roundworm in your brain.
Yeah, especially a rabbit raccoon. Rabbit raccoon will attack you. They can see you on 50 yards and start running towards you. You know there's something wrong with that bad boy.
Yeah, any wild animal that runs you towards you is definitely dangerous. This is why you need like a samurai sword to, anyway. Yeah, that's very interesting. Glanders. I never heard of this. Number 12, glanders. Mortality rate, 40%. Glanders is an extremely rare but deadly bacterial disease transmitted through infected animals and people. With glanders, flu-like symptoms, here we go again, quickly progress to pneumonia, pulmonary abscess. That's like a big, I don't know what it is, like big pus ball or something like that.
Yeah.
And fatal blood infection. Yeah, yeah. You don't want abscesses. Only one case of glanders has been confirmed in the United States since 1945. That's good. When a lab worker was accidentally exposed during research. Well, now, isn't that interesting? You remember the 15 vials of smallpox that were in the Merck lab? There you go. A lab worker accidentally exposed during research.
During research, what did that tell you?
Yep. This disease is endemic in animals in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. All right. Number 11, monkey bee virus. All right. Most of these, none of us have ever really heard of. Monkey bee virus, mortality rate, 42%. Bee virus spread by macaque monkeys. It's quite rare, but can cause severe brain damage if not treated quickly. Are macaques used in medical research? Something tells me, if I remember. Since B virus was discovered in 1932, 50 people have contracted the disease. 21 of them died. Okay, now top 10. I'm going to hold up here for a second. I'm guessing if Alan does call, he's going to call at 7 o'clock, thinking he was supposed to call at 6 o'clock, but I'll talk to him about that later. I almost said it. Who wants to – let's take a guess now. What are the top 10 diseases, the most infectious diseases in the world? You guys want to rattle off some here, and I'll go through them in just a minute. Gene, you got some guesses?
Probably gunshots is in there too.
No, that's not a disease. Only for the CDC.
The CDC is trying to make it a disease. Well, Congress is.
Would flu and pneumonia?
Let's find out. So we got flu and pneumonia. I can never spell that. Bianchi, you got a couple of guesses for the top 10?
No, go ahead. Run them off.
I'm curious as to what number one is.
Yeah, no, I was very curious too. And when I read, I was very surprised. Number 10, African sleeping sickness. Mortality rate, 42.5%. That's almost half, folks. Okay, and that's even with treatment. All right. African trypanosomiasis. I think, isn't that the tsetse fly? Is a parasitic infection transmitted by the tsetse fly. There we go. Okay, yeah, I remember it now. Sleeping sickness, folks. It is characterized by fever and headache followed by sleep disturbances. Untreated, the disease will always lead to coma and death. Let me try that again.
Wow.
Untreated, the disease will always lead to coma and death. All right. So, and it kills almost half the people who do get treated. All right. Technicians. Okay. They got Ivory Coast. They got a picture there. Okay. So that's African sleeping sickness. And then they have the one in the crisis of World Health. Okay. Fine. Number 8, Ebola. This is the one.
Oh,
that
forgot about
me.
Ebola. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the one that scared me when Obama was stupid enough to bring people into the country with Ebola. All right. So I never really worried about COVID that much because my research quickly showed it was easily killed with chloroquine. It was not a big deal. There was no pandemic. It was all a marketing hoax. We knew that back, you know, early in 2020. This is the one that scared me because, mortality rate, 50%. So you've got a 50% chance of dying even with treatment. All right. Fruit bats and other African wildlife are natural hosts of Ebola. Once passed to a human population, the virus is contagious through direct contact with another person. So at least it's limited to direct contact. It's not airborne. It's not any of the waterborne or any of these other ways. It says there are no proven treatments or vaccines for the virus at this time. No proven treatments or vaccines for the virus, for Ebola. So the only way to contain Ebola is to contain it, quarantine, stop it cold. As late as January 2020, there was an ongoing outbreak of the disease in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Number 8, Marburg virus. All right. That's another one that the people are spreading a theory that the globalists might want to spread to wipe us all out. Marburg virus is clinically similar to Ebola. Tells me it's man-made, right? It is initially transmitted to humans through contact with Rousset's bats. It was probably genetically enhanced. What do you bet? Once the virus enters a human population, it is contagious via human bodily fluids. Remember Marburg bats? You know, remember the bat connection of Wuhan from the open market? Yeah.
Bats have a lot of connection to
bats are bad stuff.
Medical, yeah, negative medical things. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're mammals too. But fortunately, bats are generally fruit and insect eaters. The only bat that I think is going to cause you or should cause you any grief is a vampire bat. And even then, they still want to feed off animals, bloodsuckers.
Yeah, they bite animals.
They do.
Especially
cats.
Yeah. Probably the top 10 all going to be from Africa.
Well, let's find out. We've got certainly some of them here. In fatal cases, death from severe blood loss usually occurs 8 or 9 days after the onset of symptoms. That's Marburg. Okay, Hendra virus. Never heard of this one. Mortality rate, 57%. This virus, also spread by fruit bats, infects humans and horses. It was discovered in Australia in 1994. Cases are rare, good. Between 1994 and 2013, 7 people were diagnosed and 4 of them died. Symptoms include flu-like. See, the problem with flu symptoms is the flu can be an indicator of almost anything.
Right.
This is where you need that guy from House, you know, the doctor who was like, well, let's find out what this really is. You know, if you complain of flu, you know, you should check it out just because it might, you know, especially if you've been traveling or any of these places, you know, you got to come back and go, uh-oh. Symptoms include flu-like respiratory illness followed by, in severe cases, encephalitis. So there you go. So if Hendra virus leads to encephalitis, which we know leads to death. This, and we've got a photo of Queensland, Australia. Okay, bird flu, number six. Mortality rate, 60%. Severe avian flu is spread from close contact with infected birds. According to the World Health Organization, the WHO, human-to-human transition does not appear to happen often. An outbreak of the deadly H5N1 strain among poultry was reported in, guess where, China, February 1st, 2020. Number five, Nipah virus. Never heard of this. Mortality rate, 75%.
Wow.
This bat-borne virus is related to Hendra virus. It also presents with acute respiratory illness and fatal encephalitis. So encephalitis is connected to a bunch of these things. Nipah virus is more common than Hendra virus, resulting in near annual outbreaks in Bangladesh since 2001. By the way, we have listeners in Bangladesh. Just thought I'd put that in too. Number four is going to disgust you. Brain-eating amoeba. Mortality rate, 95%. It's called Naegleria fowleri, also known as brain-eating amoeba. It's commonly found in warm, fresh water and enters the body through the nose. Okay, don't go swimming in warm, fresh water. You don't know, folks. All right. The disease it causes is difficult to diagnose and almost always fatal. Yeah, 95%. Yeah, that's almost always. Early symptoms of neck stiffness and headache quickly progress to confusion, seizures, and frequently death. It is also rare, thank God. Between 0 and 8 cases are reported annually in the United States, but it's still here. So there are places where you can pick up brain-eating amoeba in the United States. Just to ruin
your
day.
Yeah, you hear about it every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Balamuthia encephalitis, number three. Mortality rate, 98%. All right. These dangerous amoebas. Amoebas are really scary. Amoebas can infect. Don't drink fresh water. Boil it. Don't drink water. River water. Boil that stuff. This is why it's so dangerous. I don't know how our settlers crossed the plains, drinking from rivers and lakes and things like that, but they did. Anyway, these dangerous amoebas can infect many different parts of the body, including the skin, sinuses, and brain. The amoebas live in soil and can enter the body through open wounds or be breathed in. The disease is very rare, again, thank God, with only 200 reported cases since it was discovered in 1986. So some of these are new. Balathuma encephalitis, number three.
Sometimes babies born without limbs are been affected by some of this bacteria.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks like amoebas are far more dangerous than we thought. I mean, we had them in school. I mean, we used to look at them under the microscope. I thought they were benign little things. Apparently not so benign. Number two.
Right.
I want you to guess number two. Want to try take a crack at number two?
No, because most of them are things I've never heard of.
This one you've heard of. Rabies. Pianchi was commenting on it earlier. Rabies is the – well, actually, they have two listed as number one, but I'm gonna call this one number two because the order it's listed on the page. Mortality rate, 100%. I'm going to do that again. Mortality rate, 100%. There have been only a handful of cases in human history of unvaccinated people surviving the rabies virus. 99% of cases are spread by dog bites. There you go. I made a picture of a child in Bali holding his dog's rabies vaccine. This is why it's so critical to get to have your animals
vaccinated.
Because the animal's vaccinated against rabies. But not only that, if you get bitten by any animal, you better damn well go to the doctor. And apparently rabies shots are not as painful. It used to be in your gut. They used to have to give you stomach injections.
Yeah.
I think it's better now.
21 shots.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better now. But, dog bites. And that raccoon that's running towards you, or any animal, squirrels, any animal, rodents especially, any wild animal that runs towards you, you better damn well kill it or avoid it. All right, number one. Who wants to guess number one, the most infectious, dangerous disease in the world today? Do we have any takers? Going once, going twice?
No.
I already got the couch up against the door, so go ahead.
Mad cow disease is the number one most dangerous disease in the world today. Mad cow disease. Mortality rate, 100%. This is why I stopped eating beef for years, and I still don't eat hamburger. Well, on rare occasions, because hamburger is the problem. You mix all this beef in from different places, Britain, Brazil, all these nations around the world, they all kind of, contribute to hamburger. But if you eat, this is why the safest beef, if you're going to eat beef, you want to eat beef that's a regular cut. you know, like a ribeye or a T-bone or a whatever, you know, part of the beef you want, chuck, you know, all those different things. As long as it's a regular cut of beef, it's from an animal, a known part. But if it's hamburger, you don't know if it's bean, you don't know a hoof, you don't know what the hell's in there. Hot dogs, same thing. Don't eat hot dogs anymore either, okay? Mortality rate, 100%. When humans contract mad cow disease, doctors call it Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or Jakob, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. It is considered rare. Well, it wasn't rare in England. An average of 350 cases. Okay, that's not rare. 350 cases are reported in the United States each year. This causes holes in your brain. Okay, 350 cases. That's not rare to me. 350 cases, that's huge. All right, it's still out
people
there.
People eat rare beef.
Don't eat rare beef. Don't eat raw beef. Don't eat just, you know. And
it's a dish for Ethiopians, rare beef. I was at an Ethiopian restaurant here, mm-hmm. and I by mistake ordered it. And it's what it was. Rare beef had some spices on it.
Did it, was it regular cuts or was it hamburger?
I don't know what it was. I didn't eat it. But
good.
I'll tell you, it's a lot of things that go on that people are not aware of or what the heck they're doing. Like when people go to a restaurant or order rare beef, and there's a difference between raw and rare. But some of this stuff looks like it's raw to me.
Yeah.
Steak tartare is raw beef with a little egg on top. Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, it says it's not clear what causes most cases of the deadly neurologic disorder. Symptoms include personality changes, insomnia, loss of muscle control, and hallucinations. Well, yeah, if your brain's being eaten. And I don't mean to be – well, I do mean to be graphic. I want to scare the hell out of you. I told you I was going to scare the hell out of everybody.
Well, you know what, too?
What's that?
The human lifespan increase when humans start cooking their food.
Oh, of course. Well, I talked about – I don't know if you were on the call when I made the comment earlier that in the Civil War they discovered that soldiers who drank coffee were much healthier and lived longer than the soldiers who didn't. It wasn't the coffee. It was the fact that they boiled the water. Yeah, there's a lot of simple things you can
and
do to boil your water.
I was listening to a doctor yesterday on a radio station out of Detroit, and she made mention – you know, these doctors, they're trying to convince people to take the vaccination. I just wonder if they're getting some sort of kickback. But she said that with this, what is the Omicron variant?
Oh, Omicron. The mild. You always just say the mild Omicron variant. Otherwise, you know, I get upset.
Yeah. Now, listen to this. She said that the thing now is to see how effective it is against the vaccination. Now, that's backwards, isn't it? You're supposed to see how effective the vaccination is against the virus.
Yeah, that's a good call. You're absolutely right. That's crazy, but yeah, that's very interesting. The mild Omicron variant, which has not caused a single hospitalization, that Brandon banned travel from Africa because he's a racist. He wants to punish Africa for not having enough vaccine sales for his family business. The Omicron variant is around the world immediately. Fascinating, huh? It's discovered everywhere. Wow, how'd that happen? Just in time for Christmas. Just in time to put down the cases against mandatory vaccines in the courts. They're going to use this against the courts. You watch. You know, and also to the fact that COVID, of course, was dying out. The Delta strain was dying out. So it's time to bring in a new, the real or imagined. I have no clue. But we do know from many doctors that viruses, as they mutate, they get weaker. That's what a mutation is. A mutated human being is a weaker human being if you have bad mutations, which puts the theory of natural selection and Darwin's evolution on his head, which is dependent on mutations that are more successful. Sorry, folks, mutations are generally worse, you know, for an animal species. The mutated ones, they're the ones that die out first, okay? So that's, we can talk about that sometime, too. All right, I don't think Alan's going to be joining us, which is too bad. I wanted to hear our Belize report, but I know he had something going on. He was going to try and squeeze in some time, but that didn't happen. Let me play you something from Santa Rosa Volunteers and a couple of other things. We'll take a little break. We've got Derek Parks going to join us at 7:30 with the economic report, and oh, do we have a lot to talk about there. Anyway, so Gene, Piaki, any comment before I take a little break here? Going once,
no,
going twice?
I don't have a comment.
Boy, you've already scared the hell out of us. What more can
yeah,
we take?
Yeah, exactly.
Told you I would. You know, well, listen, I was scared last night.
Though.
I had to go to sleep after reading all that nonsense. You know, well, not nonsense, but it was like, oh, that's interesting. All right, let me find my Sedition Act. I haven't played that one for a while. This will take a few minutes, and we'll be back in a little bit.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government, formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch, bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor." This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States." In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases. The key words here are under the direction of the court. The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. All right, just one more announcement. Hello, Ben.
Once a show, I might just get away with it. But Strikeforce energy drinks are now sponsors. We are now affiliates with Strikeforce. And so 20% discount on your energy drinks from Strikeforce. And in your discount code, you put code WYL, and that stands for Write Your Laws, code WYL, and you'll get a 20% discount. And they're also helping Action Radio out from that. So while you're helping Action Radio, you're getting a discount on your energy drinks. You're getting energy and good stuff. So Strikeforce is there for us also. So I'm going to make Pianki's live, and Jean come back whenever she feels like. And we've got about 15 minutes left. I want to get all those announcements in before Derek comes on, because once we have Derek at 7:30, Jim at 8, and Chappie at 8:30. So we're flat out with economics and gun talk, you know, once we get to the bottom of this hour. And I want to get to what Clarence Thomas said in the Supreme Court on the abortion decision from yesterday. And so, yeah, any comments so far? Pianki, Jean, anything I said before, anything on the Sedition Act or whatever.
I would say what you were talking about, the list, it's just a lot of common sense. And when we're doing things, handling things, eating food, you know, just whatever, going about our day, just a lot of common sense. And that's not to say I won't go do something today and get one of those Ebola things. But, you know, it's just live your life, no fear, because basically – any of us could be, you know, stricken with any of those things at any given moment in time, because even though a lot of them are rare, things happen.
And most of them are treatable, you know. Yeah. And the best thing I can say with the beef thing is, I mean, millions of hamburgers every year and don't have a problem. So that's not an issue. But it is an issue, you know, for those that do. So if with mad cow disease, I can pass on hamburgers. I'd much rather have a steak anyway, you know, and it's a recognized cut of meat. And it's inherently far safer than hamburger from who knows where.
But you know what? I love a good hamburger now and then, and I'm not going to live in fear. You know, it's like if I'm going to be afraid of everything I put in my mouth because it may have something, it's like then you're not really living.
Yeah, that's true. But you can, it reminds me of that movie with who's the comic? Jennifer Aniston and the son of the other comics. You know who I'm talking about, that guy. Anyway, he wouldn't eat beer nuts in a bar or bar nuts. And he was afraid of diseases. And you can be a germphobe. You can be like Howard Hughes and some of these other, you know, folks and just, you know, think you can, you know, keep away from everything, and you can't. What you can do is go to your butcher and have them, you know, freshly grind beef for you. You can have fresh ground beef and make all the burgers you want. You know, you can go to restaurants that advertise 100% American beef, and you're safer than, you know, mixed beef from around the world. So there are things you can do. Same thing. I mean, I wouldn't give up whitewater river rafting because there might be an amoeba somewhere in that river. On the other hand, if I feel sick after going whitewater rafting, I'm going to go get checked out for amoeba. That's a possibility. So the knowledge is what saves you. The knowledge will carry you through. But I don't walk barefoot, for example, especially not on strange soils and farms. And I don't walk barefoot anyway, just because I've never liked it. But that saves you a lot of stuff too. So you're not contracting, you know, parasites and things from the soil. You know, so there are a lot of things. But don't start. I mean, I toured all over Europe. I ate every restaurant, good and bad, every farmer's market, every everything, and I was fine. Okay, but if I ever got sick, I would have done something about it. But you know, recognize what take the basic precautions. And I'm a little more leery of sushi now than I was before. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to stop eating sushi. Let's get Josie on the line here and see what her thing is. And then I'll get to my Clarence Thomas article. Josie, did my disease list scare the hell out of you or what?
Well, the reason I wanted to call is I have a report on our friend that he was at the hospital. That he checked himself. Well, his wife put him in the hospital because of COVID, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's been there for since before Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And he was improving. They were doing rehab and all that a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. And they say he had a panic attack, and just because he's lonely and just not feeling good, you know. But the COVID is gone. The oxygen level and everything was good, and they decided to put him in the ventilator yesterday.
What?
And I begged the wife, please, and so many people were begging her, and she did not listen. And guess what happened? When they put the ventilator, I guess I don't know what happened, but they blew his lungs. So now it's a nightmare. It's nightmare on their hands. I know. I was crying. I was a mess.
I'm so sorry.
Left you a message yesterday.
Yeah, no, I got the message. So, yeah.
It's a shame. This didn't have to happen. So it's
why would you put a perfectly a person who's breathing normally on a ventilator? Ventilators for people that can't breathe.
Yes, he was.
Did they get a kickback for ventilators too? I mean, I'm surprised he didn't get remdesivir.
Well, if you die from the ventilator, I believe it's $100,000 for the hospital. Yeah, you get free money. That's why the hospital want to put you. They're desperate. They start.
There's something with that. Yes.
You're right.
Yeah.
Can you give me some documentation on that?
I can try to find out through one of the nurses.
Well, it would be in the I can look for it too. The Center for Medicaid Payments, CMS. That's probably where it is.
No, I don't think it's Medicaid's not paying for that. It's the CDC. It's coming directly from China.
Exactly.
And Bill Gates. No,
yeah.
You're not going to find it. So what's happening, like you and me were told at the rally, $2,300 cash, it went up. One of the nurses is telling me it's a lot more money than $2,300 to put you under remdesivir as soon as you walk in the hospital.
Right.
For every dosage that people take, it was $2,300 cash bonus. And then once they put you on the ventilator for 10, 12 days and you die, it's $100,000 in their pocket for the hospital. So this is evil and criminal. What they're doing to innocent people. This is, and now this thing, they blew up his lungs, and they were going to rush him yesterday to do surgery. What can they do with an erupted lung? I mean, he's going to have new lungs now.
Yeah, it's kind of like they harm someone, and then they try to fix it. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah,
no,
I just got news this morning that a friend of mine was taken to the hospital with COVID and pneumonia. And the sad thing is, she's a nurse.
Yeah.
So, I pray.
Jean,
all I can do is pray because I can't stay in fear. But it's like, that does not look good. From what I know, the path that's usually taken.
Yeah. What's happening is once you get into the hospital, because this particular hospital, they only have 6 patients and they're desperate for the money. They're long COVID because I know all the housekeeping and they tell me everything. So I got my little sources everywhere. Your friend, what they need to do, I'm not a doctor, but my advice is ivermectin. She can request ivermectin immediately and a high dosage of vitamin C intravenous through their veins. And that will cure them. They shouldn't even go to the hospital at all. That's
oh,
the
I
thing.
Agree.
Do not go to the hospital, period. So anyway, that's the best news that I had this morning. I haven't talked to the family yet, but it's just we begged this woman not to allow the ventilator. But, as soon as she got him in the hospital, the first thing we were talking is about ventilators because they're desperate to put you in a ventilator. This breaks my heart, and it's just my stomach was sick all night last night. I don't know what's going to happen.
This is why I'm so glad
I
did open heart surgery before, because I was on a ventilator. I mean, I didn't know what it was at the time, but I was on the heart-lung machine and, clinically dead for 4 hours while they were repairing a valve in my heart. Amazing surgery. I mean, I have nothing but praise for all the folks that did it. But, then, of course, what happened afterwards where I have my chest full of fluid from, I think, the blood thinners, that's another problem. But they did the heart surgery extremely well. I have no heart murmur and everything's great, but I was on a ventilator. And, you're on a ventilator when you can't breathe on your own. But if you can breathe on your own, it's like giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to somebody that's breathing. What, are you crazy? lungs are delicate things. I'll tell you, when I was suffocating on my own fluid and they had to drain 4.5 liters out of my chest, through my back, by the way, I didn't even tell how long the needle was. Oh, yeah, this is crazy. And they did it 2 days in a row. And they said, well, you got to come back a third day. I said, hell no. I said, you're taking everything out now. And one of the most, I was bad. I said, but one of the most painful feelings in my life, this is where I really did take my full pain dose of hydrocodone, was when my lungs were reinflating. There is no pain in the world like lungs reinflating. I'm here to tell you. It is an excruciating experience deep in your chest. But hey, it's better than suffocating.
But,
Greg,
I think my opinion is they're using the ventilator a little different than before. I think now it's malicious. How are they using the ventilators? Like you just said, you were under the ventilator and you're not dead. But now,
well, I was then.
Putting you in the ventilator.
Yeah.
You know,
but it was different.
Putting you in the ventilator.
Right.
It's a little different, I think.
Yeah,
they're
maliciously yep.
making sure you're not alive when you come out of them. One of the nurses that works with the ventilator, she said 1% survive. That's what she was telling me. 1%.
See, I thought it was
3%. That's about it.
That's even worse.
Oh, no. She works with them. She said almost nobody comes out of them. Yeah. The
Watch
way
out.
They're using them now, see? Not before.
So they're not using them properly. They can't be. Like I say, mine was the proper use. I was not breathing on
exactly.
my own. They actually stopped my heart and my lungs, put me on the machine, did the heart surgery, and, you know, jump-started me back up again. That must have been interesting. But anyway, and I remember waking up with the tubes down my throat, and I tried to rip them out, and they had to stop me.
Hey.
I said, I got the world's greatest gag reflex. Anyway,
yeah.
But the point was, it was nice to be back. I was really disappointed
job.
Too when I woke up. I didn't get that out-of-body experience. I didn't get to float around watching my own operation. I didn't see the light.
You didn't go to heaven and come back?
What's that?
I said you didn't go to heaven and come back?
No, I didn't. Well, obviously it wasn't my time, but I was just out. All I remember was the last words
yeah.
were I said, I'm going to be a famous talk show host one day. I said, please do a good job. He said, we did this every day. Don't worry about it. I said, yeah, but I don't.
Uh-huh.
That's the last thing I remember. Next day I remember I woke up with tubes down my throat. Anyway, point being, they did a really good
yeah.
job. So, modern medicine can be amazing with what they can do, but they're not using it properly. And as I understand the mechanism of how this works, and we've got a couple minutes before Derek joins us, so let's keep going with this.
Okay.
But the way I understand that the problem is that they don't treat early for COVID, which can be easily knocked out with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine.
They send you home.
They send you home, right? So this is the first disease in history
yeah.
where they don't treat you, where the treatment is no treatment.
No.
I mean, that's insane. Anyway, I've got an article on my Facebook page from the Geller Report. You can all look this up. Dying COVID-19 patient recovers after court orders hospital to administer ivermectin. And this is from December 2nd. So this is Pamela Geller,
yeah.
Geller Report. And this is someone who almost died. They had to go through three court orders before the hospital finally allowed them the life-saving treatment. And, of course, you hear what the hospital said afterwards. They refused to comment, of course. But, yeah, that's right. I've got that article. We can get to it. But as I understand it, you don't get early treatment, which means that you're going to get COVID's going to get really bad, and you're going to go to the hospital so they can give you remdesivir, which causes kidney failure in many, many people. And that leads somehow to pulmonary edemas, like a filling of your lungs with fluid because your kidneys.
Well, the thing is, they also say though the first week is when you really want to get it under control. If it continues to get bad, the second week is when the inflammation and everything starts. And I think that's when people are more likely to have strokes and a lot of
isn't that the connection,
they should be taking the ivermectin as soon as they are diagnosed with it, soon, because that's when they can have the best results. Yeah.
You can take ivermectin anyway. You can take it as a preventive.
Most people don't have a whole lot on hand. And so if you get diagnosed with it, that's boom, when you want to take it.
Yeah. Quercetin, the non-prescription hydroxychloroquine.
And the other thing. Greg, the other thing I wanted to say is in my Sunday school class, they're going down by one because all of them have been vaccinated. In my Sunday school class, except another couple and me and my husband, they're all ending up in the hospital right now with heart problems, one by one. And one of the other ladies, she just had a mini stroke. Oh, yeah, they're going
Are these
down.
Older folks by chance?
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. And one of her legs was full of blood clots. And I said, and the doctor said, we don't know what's wrong. I said, I know what's wrong. I said, start taking ivermectin, and she did. 2 weeks later, she was good, and now she's having a heart problem. And they were going to do a 3D test or whatever. And when she was waiting for the test, she had a mini stroke. She just collapsed. And this is what's happening to a lot of vaccinated. They're going to have strokes, heart attacks. My cousin has blood clots in her head, and she's dead. her mother, after the vaccine, she died. So, and one of our friends had a heart attack right after we celebrated my husband's birthday. The next day, he was in the hospital with a heart attack and open heart surgery. And he told one of my friends, do not tell Josie that I was vaccinated, and because I've been against it, and they know it. And then they've been getting away from us for a long time, barely talking to us. But this is not good. This is not good for many people that got the vaccine. And one of the hospitals, they say I'm not allowed to talk to their nurses about the vaccine. So it's kind of, they cut me off from payroll, actually, because I was talking to one of the workers about the vaccine, the dangers that it is. And I talked to this lady, the head honcho of this hospital, and I said, I'm not going to stop talking about it. I got freedom of speech in this country, freedom of speech. I said, and they're going to come after you next. I told her that over the phone. She didn't like that at all. And I'm not afraid. I don't care if I lose the money. I'm not going to have that blood money in my hand. This is sad what they're doing to our innocent people. And now a nurse was in my store 2 days ago, and she said, you should see what's happening now with the booster. She says, all my people that are getting the booster in the nursing home, they're becoming angry, enraged. I don't know what's happening. She goes, I really don't know what's happening with this booster.
Yeah, we know what's happening.
This is not the same person. Huh?
We know what's happening. Well, the personality changes. I mean, this is one of those things we got from another one of those diseases we went over this morning. I got to get you to sum up, though. We got Derek on the line right now. We're going to talk money for a little bit. This is fascinating.
I'll be listening. You guys have a blessed day, and please keep this friend of ours in your prayers. I don't know what's going to happen. I'll give you a Monday. God bless.
God bless, Josie. It's hard to know what to do with people that can't act in their own interest because they just don't have the right information. You know, and it used to be that hospitals were a place where you could actually get help. You know, like I say, I went through open heart surgery, and so, you know, it worked out fine. I mean, they were wonderful with me, and I probably extended my life by 20 or 30 years because of it. So that's a good thing. Anyway.
Well, you could also trust. I think you could also trust the services you were given that they were the most, I don't want to say the best, but the most knowledgeable at that time. But now it's like when people have to go to court to get ivermectin, it's like, how sad is that?
Yeah, no kidding. Let's talk money. Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money. Yeah, I just sent Derek an article from the Center for Immigration Studies about all the extra money in the so-called stopgap funding measure. It's like, well, where did all this come from? $1.6 billion to help illegal alien kids, you know, become anchor babies for their family, for example. Derek, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Greg. How you doing? Hey, I want to apologize up front. I do got to kind of do the skit and go. I had an engagement pop up early this morning, so I apologize for having to be brief.
No problem at all. Well, let's get the report then, and then how much time do you have? 5 minutes, 10 minutes? What do you got?
I don't know. It depends on when the person comes here to get me.
Okay, so if you have to leave at any time, that's fine. Let's get to the report right away, and then whatever you think the most important economic issue is after that, let's get to that.
Sure, no problem. Well, I'll go ahead and get started. This is Derek of Ever Jones bringing the daily financial market report. Equities continued their wide daily swing, shrugging off early weakness to finish notably higher on Thursday. This followed by a whipsaw day on Wednesday that saw big gains immediately erased that news broke that Omicron variant case had been identified on U.S. soil. Small cap sectors like financials, industrials, and energy outperformed today. Meanwhile, Treasury yields little change, gold traded lower, and oil rose in some. Combination of performance indicated and improving sentiment towards cyclical outlook, which dampened this week as investors sought to interpret the potential impact of Omicron. U.S. equities closed higher with the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 620 points or 1.82% to 34,642. The NASDAQ closed up 127 points or 0.83 to 15,381. And the S&P 500 index closed up 64 points or 1.42% to 45.77. In the bond market, the 10-year Treasury yield is trading at 1.44%. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $1.44 or 2.2% to $67.01. And the spot price of gold was down $15 or minus 0.86 to $17.69. This is Derek Park of Edward Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Wow, you did it. Jobs report, is that coming out now or is that already out? Or what's the story with that?
Yeah, so the jobs report supposed to come out today. So the markets, the futures are kind of going sideways right now. So I think everybody's waiting to see the jobs report, which should come back pretty good. You know, I mean, we're seeing obviously improvement, lots of people hiring, you know, higher pay, many things going on that should improve. So, I mean, I say should, you know, the market for the past couple of weeks has been lackluster at best.
Yeah, I'm wondering with the jobs report because so many of those jobs are jobs that people are getting back. They're not newly created jobs. So the impression is that these are new jobs. In fact, Brandon is trying to you know, give that false impression every time he gets up and talks about it. But the truth is that most of the jobs, I think, are ones that were held before the COVID bogus lockdowns, and they're just getting their jobs back. Is there anything in the jobs report that makes a distinction between jobs back and newly created jobs?
You know, it doesn't. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, that's been one of the comments that I've seen in an article that said, you know, hey, shutting down the economy and then, you know, having other jobs or having people go back to their jobs doesn't count as new jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't take credit for a better economy when you caused the worst one.
You know, right.
You know, taking someone prisoner and kidnapping them and then letting them go and saying, look, isn't it great? I gave you your freedom. What?
Well, I equated that to you know, somebody walking in a room with a room full of people, turning off the lights, everybody mm-hmm. getting upset that you turned off the lights and then cheering, you know, when you turn the lights back on and everybody expecting you to be happy.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean? Like,
yeah.
All you did was turn it right back to the state that it was before, you know, and
exactly.
I mean, I don't think that you should be taking credit for something like that. I think that's very foolish.
Well, yeah, you can't, if you're the problem, you can't take credit until the problem is better than the, you know, the situation is better than the problem you created. And even then,
right.
I'd still be skeptical. Yeah. So this is all such, well, the stimulus plans are over. I mean, the unemployment, the extra unemployment compensation is done now, isn't it? Or has it been extended?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that last stuff went I want to say it was either the beginning of October to the end of October.
Okay, so it's been a month without it. One would think that these people, now are they starting to go back to their jobs? I mean, that would make sense. People don't go back to their jobs until their unemployment runs out. I mean, that's just human nature.
Right. So I think that's what's happening. And obviously they shouldn't have extended it back in July. It should have stopped in July, and then we would have been 3 months ahead of where we are right now.
Well, never should have started.
You know, maybe Omicron would have popped out 3 months ahead, 3 months ago.
mm-hmm. Well, we know this is planned. We know this is on schedule. You know, my theory is that the court cases that banned, you know, Brandon's illegal mandates, the three of them, Fifth Circuit, and the one that was a 10-state and now is a national one on federal contractors and health workers, you know, that they can't be mandated to get the shot. Of course, Florida is mandated that nobody can get the shot. And so we're in a pretty good situation here. But, you know, it's just strange that the variant, you know, came out, you know, in Africa. They banned travel from Africa, which to me is racist, simply because that's what they accused Trump of when he banned it from China. But the thing is that the variant that was reported in South Africa is now worldwide. Well, that's pretty fast. Yeah. So, all the cases are mild. The worst that happens is, you know, some sniffles and a scratchy throat. Well, hell, I think all of us had that when the weather got cold. Do we all have Omicron? I don't think so.
It's called the new scariant.
Ah, exactly.
There was actually a little meme that somebody come out yesterday, and it was the guy mm-hmm. pointing at the infinity symbol with an X on it. And it said, you know, in the fight against COVID, we are here. And it points at an X, you know, obviously that it's going to continue going on infinitely.
Oh, exactly. Well, you're going to run out of Greek letters. You know, they'll have to start with Russian ones next. And the Russian alphabet has 36 letters. So they have a lot better chance of yeah, Greek letters. Greek alphabet is like 20. So I've learned them in the fraternities. Yeah. Was it alpha, beta, gamma, delta, zeta, eta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, omicron, pi, rho, sigma, tau, phi, chi, psi, omega. There we go. I can still say it. I can still say the Greek alphabet.
My goodness. Man,
from my fraternity days in college, yeah. I can say the regular alphabet backwards if you really want to get crazy. Z, Y, X, W, V, U, T, S, R, T, P, O, N, M, L, K, J, I, H, D, F, E, D, C, B, A. There you go. Shades of my childhood.
Hey, anyway. Greg, I gotta step out now. My apologies for having to be brief today. Anyway, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll have a lot to talk about. Inflation, jobs, supply chain, you know, the usual stuff.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Derek. There we go.
Yep. Take care.
There we go. And goodbye, Derek. And we got his initial contact information when he started. Yeah. So I didn't mean to waste his last couple of minutes with goofy stuff on alphabets, but we didn't have much time anyway. So let's see if we have Pianki's left us. Hopefully he'll join us again. And anybody else, Jesse, you know, welcome back too. But if anybody's welcome to call, 215-383-3832. We got about 20 minutes until Jim gets here. Jim Dykes with the Second Amendment Report, and then Chappie, Donnie Chappie Chapman with our Gun Tech and Competition Report. So this is kind of like Gun Day here. Gun Day is like, you know, money and guns. I mean, well, it's more fun to talk about the money and guns. So let me go back to this other article I was thinking of here on Justice Thomas, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And Gene, feel free to join me here at any time on this one. This is Washington Examiner. This was December 2nd, so yesterday. The Thomas Court, Roe skeptic seizes moment during Supreme Court abortion hearing. This is by Kaelin Deese, K-A-E-L-A-N-D-E-E-S-E, breaking news reporter, again, from yesterday. And Kaelin, I'm guessing her, but just in case. Anyway, she says, Clarence Thomas is the only current justice who was on the bench when the Supreme Court reaffirmed its previous precedent legalizing abortion. That would have been Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Thomas dissented in 1992, his first year on the court. Now he's a leading member among the court's conservative bloc that could uphold the constitutionality of Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban and, by extension, overturn Roe v. Wade. Yeah, this is going to be really interesting. We talked about this yesterday. We kind of, I think, shortchanged the conversation. We'll probably pick it up next week with Jonathan. But anybody wants to comment, we've got about 20 minutes right now to deal with this one. Thomas on Wednesday asked, back to the article, Thomas on Wednesday asked a series of sharp questions as the Supreme Court considered Dobbs v. Jackson, Women's Health Organization. That's his prerogative, as the most senior Supreme Court justice, having been nominated in 1991 by President George Bush, H.W. Bush, and confirmed by the Senate. Yeah, it's interesting. Clarence Thomas, for years, never really asked questions. I think he was kind of either in the shadow of or did not, you know, just particularly care to question because Scalia questioned so much. I think he was in Scalia's shadow for a bit. But I think Clarence Thomas has really emerged now, not only as a senior member, but a real leader. Or the leader, certainly the conservative leader, but a leader on the Supreme Court. And that's to all of our benefit. Article says Thomas, part of the present 6-3 conservative majority court. Yeah, well, I'm not quite sure about three of them yet, has repeatedly called for overruling Roe v. Wade. Issued in 1973, and Planned Parenthood versus Casey issued 19 years later, the two cases that established and reaffirmed the rights of women to undergo legal abortion procedures. Well, that's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? Rights of women to undergo legal abortion procedures. Yeah, okay. You heard my comments yesterday. I don't need to say more. I'm more interested in what Thomas said. During Wednesday's arguments over Dobbs, Thomas questioned U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preloger, P-R-E-L-O-G-A-R, or Preloger, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her right, on how the Constitution permits elective abortions. He says, here's a quote, "What is confusing is that if we're talking about the Second Amendment, I know exactly what we're talking about. If we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, I know what we're talking about because it's written. It's there. What specifically is the right here that we're talking about?" And this is Thomas asking the federal government's solicitor general. Right? She said, "I think that the court in those other contexts, with respect to those other amendments, has had to articulate what the text means and the bounds of the constitutional guarantees." And then she said, later affirming that she was referring to the right of a woman prior to viability to control whether to continue with a pregnancy. This is why I brought this bill that we wrote yesterday. If the issue is whether or not to continue a pregnancy, you can still save the baby. I have never in my life understood why abortion has to lead to the death of the baby. If you need to terminate a pregnancy, if you want to terminate a pregnancy, then obviously there's another life involved here. So that's fine. If it's medically possible to terminate the pregnancy and then save the life of the baby, that should be the condition for terminating the pregnancy. Of course, obviously you'd be terminating your parental rights too, because why would anybody terminate a pregnancy unless there are specific health reasons? You know, if your intent was to kill the baby anyway, then okay, then we're going to, you know, do it in a way that that saves the life of the baby. And then all kinds of other considerations come in that I'll save for another show. But I've never understood that connection, that automatic connection that abortion means, you know, the death of the baby. Why did they figure this out decades ago that abortion should be a termination of the pregnancy only? That never ended the language. Anyway, I just found that interesting. All right. The article says, while the majority of justices raised substantial doubts regarding the jurisprudence behind Roe, Thomas has historically been a critic of the landmark case, as he notably voted to overturn it when the court considered Casey. Thomas also wrote a sharp dissent in 2000 when the court struck down Nebraska's ban on partial birth abortion. Yeah, I can't believe the court upheld that. The exchange between Thomas and the Solicitor General boils down to fundamentally different approaches to constitutional interpretation. And that's according to Jennifer Mascott, an assistant professor of law at the Antonin Scalia, here he is again, law school at George Mason University, and a former law clerk to Thomas. See, this is why I have said for years, and certainly during the course of this show, that the courts should not, cannot, legally have no business, quote, interpreting the Constitution. You don't have to interpret it. Just like Justice Thomas said, Second Amendment, it's written, when it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, it means, surprise, surprise, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Okay? There's nothing, there's no ambiguity there. I mean, it's just, you can't even encroach the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Now, beyond that, using arms, that's a whole different question. And that's not covered by the Second Amendment. But the Second Amendment, in the context of it, keeping and bearing, it's absolute. People have the absolute right to keep and bear arms. Okay? Period. No interpretation needed. And in fact, no interpretation, any interpretation is going to screw it up. All right, back to the article. I said, I think Justice Thomas's point is something more fundamental, that if you look at the clause of the 14th Amendment that has been claimed as the mantle for an asserted abortion right, a lot of code language in here, asserted abortion right, basically it was created out of nothing. They say it's the due process clause and says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Mascott told the Washington Examiner, and there's no specific substantive right listed there at all. Okay, so let me explain that for a second. What the pro-abortion folks are relying on, they say when they talk about the 14th Amendment, the Liberty Clause, you know, have the right to liberty, but what they conveniently forget is the word before it, life, okay? The right to life, one would think, being ahead of the word liberty, is preeminent over liberty. In other words, your liberty does not mean you can take somebody else's life, okay? So you have the right to your own life, the right to your own body autonomy, but your life ends where the life and liberty of somebody else begins. Okay, that to me is pretty clear. So to use the 14th Amendment as a justification for creating the imaginary right of abortion, the right to kill another human being, makes no sense. You can't justify that constitutionally. And I think any first-year law student would be able to argue that, you know, articulately, yet that's what the left is relying on, and that's what the leftist justices are relying on, saying, well, it's liberty. Women have the right to liberty, liberty of abortion. Well, where the hell did that come from? Okay. So I think I pretty much settled that, so I'm going to get back to the article. Thomas has been lauded by conservative political leaders over his jurisprudence regarding abortion. Here we go. So then we got Senator Mitch McConnell, and let's get back to the main stuff. For Thomas, this is the chance to hear the case of Dobbs serves as the pinnacle moment to influence Supreme Court abortion decisions at a time when the court has been fortified by a strong conservative majority. Don't you love this language? This is a liberal reporter, obviously, but, you know, still doing a pretty decent job. Thomas has suggested the Mississippi-based case presents an opportunity to re-examine Roe and Casey, a view shared by other members of the court's somewhat shifting conservative bloc, which can include Chief Justice John Roberts, on occasion, along with Justice Samuel Alito, my other favorite, along with Thomas, Amy Coney Barrett, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh, the Trumpies, which I'm still not quite sure of yet. Anyway, Thomas says our abortion precedents are grievously wrong and should be overruled. He read that was his dissent in the opinion in 2020 that blocked the Louisiana abortion law as critics and would close nearly every abortion procedure in the state. All right, I should read that again. I kind of botched that up a little bit. Thomas wrote in his dissenting opinion in a 2020 decision that blocked a Louisiana abortion law, critics said, would close nearly every abortion procedure clinic in the state. So obviously they upheld it. Chama says the Constitution does not constrain the state's ability to regulate or even prohibit abortion. I think he's right on. Gene, I think about 10 minutes before Jim gets here, we're going to talk guns again. Did we leave anything off from yesterday's discussion? Does this help at all, you know, Justice Thomas? What do
no,
you
think?
What do you think?
It's good, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got a little bit of time here. This is. Go ahead.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Do you think
because
the court's going to?
Because the thing is, they were saying they're never going to get rid of abortion in the United States. So It's like, then if they're not going to get rid of it, you know, then why are people so upset? I don't understand, because the bottom line is this, to think that, and especially to think that at 9 months, I mean, I'm not even talking about someone that's 3 months along, but 9 months along, that baby could have been born and live, and you're terminating it. I mean, that to me is just, I can't comprehend.
I think the American public is tolerant of abortions at a time when the preborn baby is at a point so early in development, there's not enough there to feel pain or to, be considered, you know, it's definitely human life, and life has already begun, but it's not at a point, you know, where it's developing into what we consider, you know, a baby. I think what people have found with the new, the ultrasound technology and medical advances, that babies are developing a whole lot faster than they thought. You know, the old leftist thing, it's just a clump of cells. It's not a person. It doesn't exist yet. Well, that might be true in the first day or two, but after that, you know, things happen so fast. And this is something I didn't realize. I mean, I was raised in an ultra pro-choice socialist, radical feminist family. Well, I don't know about that anyway, but point being, that, you know, I was brought up in that environment and pro-choice, you know, when you're young and single sort of makes sense, you know, but then you get into it. And of course, once I had my daughter, everything changed. It's like, whoa, you know, no, this is horrible. I couldn't imagine not being without my kid. So I think parenthood changes people, but I think most people, as long as they think that it's not, you know, harming, hurting a person, they're sort of tolerant of abortion in the very earliest stages. But what we're finding is that the earliest stages are a lot earlier than I think anybody really thought about until recently. Does that make sense?
Right. And yeah, it definitely does. And the thing is, though, because I've had friends that have recently had the babies in the 3D ultrasound, you can see lots of stuff very early. So that's a good point. But also what I disagree with, and this is where it the water gets kind of murky, because I brought it up yesterday, but the thing is, like, let's say I'm pregnant. I don't want the baby. I want to get rid of the baby, but the father wants the baby.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe a woman has a right to make that decision all her own. It's like, yes, I'd have to carry it. But the bottom line, the father, I mean, you would think the father would have some rights as well. And I just think it's sad that, you know, so many times you hear that the woman just had an abortion, didn't even contact the father, or the father wanted it, but didn't matter. Still aborted.
Yeah, and that's a control problem. Yeah, that's a control problem. That's undue control to one person over another. You know, just as I believe that men cannot force women to either have an abortion or force women, you know, men cannot force women to give birth, in the same way that women cannot take away the rights of fatherhood of a man if they choose that they don't want the child. So any woman that wants to discontinue or abort a pregnancy, you know, the rights automatically go to the father then at that point. If a woman's terminating a pregnancy because she doesn't want the baby and wants to terminate early at a time when the baby can be saved, okay, so that so you may have to carry it a couple of weeks longer, you know, than you expected to under, you know, an abortion rule, but that way the baby's saved, the father's rights are honored, okay, he becomes a parent, the mother gets her choice not to be a parent, the father gets full custody at that point, and then and the life of the baby is saved. That to me seems a logical outcome that protects life, that honors rights, and allows everybody to be able to, you don't have oppressive government control either way. But men are completely left out of the abortion argument,
right,
which is crazy. Which, you know, and the other way is that I know women who have had kids, not told the father, and until they want child support. You know, you can't do that either. You know, if you don't tell the father what's going on, then, you know, you show, at the age of five, all of a sudden your life changes, and you know, you want child support from some guy that didn't even know he was a father 5 years later. So
right.
It really comes down to, in many cases, an honor system. So you have to trust that the women are going to be honorable enough to do like you say, tell the father, and the fathers have to be able to have a choice, not to force a woman to do something against her and her body, but certainly if they intend to be fathers, then their rights to the child become, the father now has parental custody. That's how I see it.
Right, but
the choice,
I also
have your choice.
Think,
yeah, go ahead. Then we'll get Josie.
I also think that if a father's paying child support or could, you know, then they have a right to have a say in the child's upbringing.
Of course.
And
well,
a
yeah,
lot
you,
of times you know. that doesn't work either. It's like, seems like the mother always gets the say. But if the father's also contributing, then they mm-hmm. have a right to say too.
Well, that's changing. Joint custody is changing that. I have my family law advocates who will tell you that that's not the case, that you know, it's much more equal than it used to be. I'm not convinced yet, but let's get Josie in the conversation. And we got, like I said, we got about 4 minutes left. I don't want to miss the chance on her. Josie, what
do
you think? Go ahead. You're live.
I just wonder what happened to it takes two to tangle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And when the time comes, it's my body, my choice. What happened to the man that really created the baby? You know, inside her body.
Yeah, she wouldn't have a baby without the guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is so stupid, and they should eliminate this, because this should not be a law in our country. They made it up.
Mm-hmm.
They lie. They got this woman to create all this lie because she never had an abortion, Roe v. Wade. She never had an abortion. She had three kids. So
yeah.
It was so well organized to lie and deceive the American people. And they made a decision. They didn't even ask the people. And so the court was wrong, and they need to call it back. That's
yeah.
what I say.
There was a challenge. I don't know where it was. I think it was either Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. There was a father that challenged the law and said, wait a minute, you can't. They actually tried to get a court injunction and say, I want, you know, that's my kid. You know, that's you know, the genetically 50% mine. I mean, you know, I'm the father. And he was saying that
mm-hmm.
he didn't want to, I don't know if he wanted to stop the abortion or at least have it so that, you know, the kid was, you know, old enough to be alive so he could get custody of his kid. But there have been lawsuits on this. And
mm-hmm.
I wonder how the abortion argument would change. I'm surprised this wasn't brought into the case. I mean, I've never seen this is an argument in the case. But if under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, you know, men are half the population. You know, and so to deny, you know, parenthood to or have no say in the argument to half the population is a direct violation of the 14th Amendment. So the same 14th Amendment mm-hmm. that the abortionists are using to say that women have the liberty, you know, over themselves, over the father and over the baby, pro-choice times three is what I call it, all right? That same clause also, that same amendment also has equal protection. Everybody's entitled to the equal protection of laws, which means if women have choice, men have choice, okay? Now, obviously, there are
mm-hmm.
biological differences. Obviously, I'm not saying that one person can have power over the other, but in the same way that men cannot compel women to either have or not have a child, women cannot compel men to be fathers with child support if they chose not to have that child. Choice works both ways.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't separate that. And if men's choice were included in abortion law, I think it would be very different.
They should.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so why isn't it that if a woman terminates a pregnancy, that the father automatically gets custody? That, you know.
Exactly.
And you save the baby. I don't understand why that's not there. Anyway, go ahead, Josie. We got a
and you know,
about a minute
Greg,
or so.
We had a young woman pregnant, and she was going to abort her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she not aborted her baby is because she found out that she had twins. So if it was one baby, she was willing to murder it. But just because it was twins, she kept the baby. And then we had another girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had another girl that she got pregnant, and she was about to be deployed with the military. So when I was talking to her, I said, so you are willing to sacrifice your baby right now to go save those Middle Eastern people? And she thought about it, but she still went ahead and had that abortion anyway.
Yeah.
So it's very sad. Very sad.
Well, I think the saddest part is, and I still come back to this connection that abortion means the death of the baby. You know, no one's ever thought to separate that in law. If, like I say, if you want to terminate a pregnancy, first of all, there may be medical reasons to terminate a pregnancy for women that still want to save the baby. You know, in that case, the law that I propose wouldn't apply. And any woman that wants to save the life of her baby, obviously the abortion laws, you know, are different. It only applies to women that want to, you know, end the life of their baby at the time they want to end their pregnancy. See, I see those as two completely separate events. And I think that's the big difference on something that's never been explored in law and I think should be. That's why I wrote the bill. Josie, did you help me with that one? I'm not sure. You might have. I know Karen Hoffman was one of my biggest persons. Yeah, I think you did. It's been a couple of years. Hey, listen, most of our bills are a couple of years old because that's when I wrote them. You know, I had time to do it then. All right, Jim's on the line. Yeah, go ahead, Josie, make the last comment.
Okay,
and then we're going to God bless you, too.
I'll
yeah, you
keep
can stick
you
around.
Today on Robert. Okay. God bless. Bye-bye.
Yeah, let me know what's going on with your friend. Yeah, that's crazy. All right,
yes,
do,
I will.
Yeah. All right, play one thing, and we'll play Jim's theme, and we'll be right back.
Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment as written a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dyce with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Yeah, welcome to our Friday Sun and Fun Day Gun Day. having way too much.
We're serious, Greg.
We're comic. We're everything all in between. Yeah, I'm doing fine. It's been if you missed our first hour, you know, a couple hours ago, and you want to have yourself really terrified. I went over the 50 most infectious, most dangerous diseases, and Pianki was on the line, and Gene was on the line, and I was going through it for the second time. I went through it last night when I found the article, but it's really disgusting. So just if you think COVID's bad, I get news to you. It's nothing compared to the really bad ones. You know, COVID with a mortality of less than 1%. So, you know, when you're sharing the show, tell people, hey, check out the first hour. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, what's going on in Gun World, sir? How are you?
I am doing well. How are you today?
I'm having a good time. Did you have a little connection problem with your internet thing there? I noticed you were kind of on the screen and then disappeared.
Yeah, for some reason, I was not hearing anything from the show. The audio was working. I got the dial tones and everything as it was dialing in. But once I connected, I couldn't hear the show at all. So
yeah, I've had that. Gene's had that happen too. I'm not sure what happens. And one time I thought I was broadcasting and I'm happily talking away and I didn't know that I wasn't broadcasting. So, you know, the gremlins are there. I figure it's all just, it's leftists. They're hiding somewhere in our Blog Talk Radio going, ha-ha, and your little dog Toto too. Anyway, at least your cell phone.
Exactly.
Yeah, at least your cell phone all is working. So any updates on the New York case or any what's going on in the legal end of this?
So, yeah, still just waiting for the opinion to be handed down in the New York case. And, you know, it will probably not be coming down until sometime in the spring, I would imagine. So, you know, we can sit back and just wait because – that's how things go. The justice system does not move swiftly.
Well, that's actually a good thing normally. You don't want it to move swiftly. I think it's
right.
But there are provisions where it can, like the injunctions on the illegal mandates of Thief and Chief Brandon. So I think they've moved very quickly there. And to their credit, even though Brandon's saying go around them, don't, you know, ignore them. He's like, ignore those court cases, but don't ignore the ones that I like. It's a really interesting standard of justice.
Yeah, and, you know, the sad thing about it taking so long is you end up then having decisions like we got this week out of the Ninth Circuit in the West, which upheld California's ban on magazines that hold more than 10 rounds.
Okay, that's intellectually impossible if you read the Second Amendment. So, you know, when I see things like this, and people say, well, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, they're experts. They know the Constitution. They know what's going on. I said, of course they know the Constitution, but it doesn't mean they don't violate it constantly. This is a complete violation of the Constitution. I went over this earlier. What about the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? Don't you understand, court?
Exactly.
Well, of course, yeah, they do understand it, but they don't care.
Right, and then I don't think this was, you know, unexpected. The Ninth Circuit is historically anti-gun, and this was an en banc decision, so the entire Ninth Circuit made the decision. So I think everyone knew that this was the decision they would make, and it would end up getting appealed to the Supreme Court, and I'm sure that's what's going to happen. The Ninth Circuit required intermediate scrutiny when they looked at it and said that it was a minimal burden on the right of self-defense. And interestingly, in the opinion, they stated that the magazine ban was perfectly acceptable because statistically it's rare that a person would need 10 rounds because on average 2.2 rounds are shot in self-defense. So I would be curious to find out if they take that same tact with the First Amendment and say that statistically most books are under 100 pages, so it's okay to ban any book that's over 100 pages, or most conversations contain, you know, fewer than 30 sentences, so free speech ends at the 30-sentence mark.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a great argument. You know, I was thinking more just the fact that they're just blatantly lying. You know, to make some arbitrary figure like 10, you know, I mean, why do the police have 15-round magazines? Why is it the government has more rights than the people? You know, if the police use firearms for self-defense, you know, there's an argument there for self-defense, but it doesn't matter because the Second Amendment doesn't come with limitations. It says bear arms. It doesn't say bear certain arms with reasonable restrictions, you know, owing to a state interest. That's not there for specific reasons. So anytime they bring in reasonable restrictions or they say, I love it. The quickest way to violate the Second Amendment is to say whatever the provision is doesn't violate the Second Amendment. You know, and they do this all the time. And it's such a bunch of crap.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, of course, if it didn't violate the Second Amendment, it wouldn't be there in a case because it wouldn't have to be challenged. So, of course, it violates the Second Amendment. So this weasel wording, you know, idea that somehow 10 rounds, you know, is and if they can do 10, they can do 6. If they can do 6, they can do 2. You know, anytime you limit anything. You know, but I still believe in the principle that no one's ever argued. Of course, I'm the only one, I think, that talks about it, is defense equality. And defense equality is where the people have to be at least as well or better armed than the government. Otherwise, you have a government tyranny and a police state. Okay, if the police are better armed than the people, that's crazy because the police serve the people. You know, the government serves the people. The only exception I make is the military, you know, operating outside the United States or in bases and things like that. Of course, they have to be, you know, the best armed people in the world. That's a good thing,
right?
You know, but as far as law enforcement contact with civilians, you know, any police department that has, you know, well, yeah, you can have your SWAT teams and armored vehicles and, you know, for things for situations that most people aren't going to handle. But the idea that the average law enforcement officer can carry a 15-round gun and civilians are limited to 10 when police are in fact civilians, is a direct violation of equal protection and a bunch of other clauses in the Constitution as well as the Second Amendment. They didn't take that into account in the case, did they? The lawyer arguing against the ban. Who was arguing against it? What little twiddly did they find to argue against this thing?
So I'm not sure who the lawyer was that was arguing it. The case was brought by CalGuns, which is kind of the Florida carry equivalent.
Okay.
In California, and it doesn't matter what argument you make. against the ban and how mm-hmm. rock solid your argument is. The Ninth Circuit's response is always going to be, yes, I understand your rationale, but guns. So that's their argument for anything, but guns.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Now, did Cal Guns hold a press conference after this? Did they get out and make public? Did they point out, you know, in articles and media appearances and everything else, you know, why the case was decided incorrectly, why the court screwed up, why it's intellectually impossible to ban magazines under the Second Amendment? Did they take any of those, you know, preventive and curative actions?
Oh, I am sure that they are doing plenty of appearances in California to talk about what's wrong with this. They've also indicated that it is their plan to appeal to the Supreme Court. So we will see what happens with that. And actually, once the New York case is decided, the Supreme Court may remand it right back to the Ninth Circuit and tell them to rule again based on the New York decision. Because I think there's a good chance that the New York decision is going to talk about appropriate scrutiny when looking at the Second Amendment, and I'm pretty sure mm-hmm. it won't be intermediate.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, and I'm still not completely clear on that concept because it doesn't make sense to me, there are different levels of scrutiny of how much a burden is being placed on people, you know, for a restriction on the Constitution. So to me, any restriction on the Constitution is unconstitutional. That's the whole point of having a Constitution and having your rights spelled out. Rights are 100%, you know, they're absolute within the context of the right. And so the Second Amendment, I've said this a million times, the Second Amendment, you know, covers the right to own and carry firearms, the right to keep and bear. It does not cover the use of firearms. So the fact that you have a fully automatic, you know, 100-round drum Thompson submachine gun is perfectly legal. Now, you can use it illegally, but having it and carrying it and owning it and keeping it and putting it on your wall and doing whatever you want to do with it is perfectly legal and covered. As long as you're within the realm of keeping and bearing, you can keep and bear whatever you want. There is you can't be touched by anything. So even those fully automatic laws are illegal because we don't stop people for what they might do in the future. Maybe that's prior restraint, and that is unconstitutional too. Okay,
yeah,
I'm off my soapbox.
So I agree with much of that. You're always going to have some exceptions, though.
As far as what?
And, you know, the best example I can think is mm-hmm. you don't allow prisoners in prison to keep and bear arms.
Of course not. But they've been given their due process. You can deny constitutional rights after due process.
Right, but that's a restriction mm-hmm. on the Second Amendment. And that would survive strict scrutiny, which I think is probably appropriate for any enumerated right. Okay. So there's going to be something there.
See, the only scrutiny I would put is the extension of the actual language of the right to how far does it go? Okay, free speech covers speech. Can you yell fire in a crowded theater? Sure, it's legal. It's not smart. It's incredibly stupid. You might be held liable. You might have a bunch of other problems, but it's still legal, despite what that argument is constantly made. You know, religious practice, you're free to practice your religion however you want, as long as you don't impinge on somebody else. Like, don't sacrifice your neighbor's chickens for voodoo, okay? Now you've impinged on somebody else's rights, so you can't go there. Same thing with guns. Guns are absolute rights to keep and bear. Okay. After that use of them, you know, or intent or things like that, if you're on your way to a bank robbery with a gun, you're intent on committing illegal action, you've already violated the law. So you don't have the right to do that. You know, so it's a lot of this, it comes to your prior restraint. You can't restrain people for what they might do in the future, maybe. And I don't know if the prior restraint article was brought up, but in a free society, you don't arrest people for what they might do. That's communist society. That's a dictatorship. That's not free. Well, you might stop a murder or something else, but, you know, if you take everybody's guns away, yeah, you might. But the damage done to everybody else's freedom so far exceeds, you know, that you can't do that. You can't base laws. You can't base court decisions, you know, on the actions of criminals, because criminals are by definition illegal. So you can't base our rights on what illegal people do. You have to protect the rights of the honest citizen.
Exactly.
That's how it works.
You know, And, you know, I tell people all the time, I can make you incredibly safe if that's what you want by locking you in a prison.
Mm-hmm.
So if I put you in a jail cell where you're guarded 24 hours a day I can make sure that you are incredibly safe. But I don't think anyone wants that.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, we usually run out of time, but I think we actually have extra today. So moving on.
Moving on. So since we had some bad news, I figure I'll give some good news.
Okay. Got a gun of the week?
This is not a gun of the week. So this is actually a Florida carry case. And we talked about it a little before when the trial court ruled, but the case is Lynch versus Florida Department of Law Enforcement. And we actually got a good decision out of the first Florida Court of Appeals in this case. And the basic facts of the case is Mr. Lynch was denied the right to purchase a firearm. FDLE, who does the background checks within Florida when you go to purchase a firearm, went into the NICS database, which is the national crime database that has the information on whether someone is or is not a prohibited person. And there was a NICS entry that said that Mr. Lynch couldn't purchase it, and the reason that FDLE gave to him was that there was an entry from New York stating that he was had been adjudicated mentally incompetent or had a court-ordered substance abuse treatment record. Lynch denied that any of that had happened, and FDLE told him that his purchase would not be approved, and it was his responsibility to go to the state of New York and clear up the NICS entry. Now, we know from previous cases that the state of New York has taken the position that if there is an incorrect entry into the NICS database, it is not their responsibility to remove it. Under federal law, they have to enter data into the NICS database. They do not have to correct incorrect data in the NICS database, which is...
Oh, gee, that makes a lot of sense.
That's a whole separate bit of litigation that I think is still ongoing in New York to try to fix that. But the appellate court in this case ruled correctly under Florida law that it's FDLE's responsibility to go and find the underlying records and determine whether Mr. Lynch is actually a prohibited person or not, that a mere entry in the NICS database does not prove that someone is a prohibited person.
Yeah, that's interesting. How many cases do you think, or is there a percentage of, you know, false positives, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, of people that are said to be prohibited and really aren't once they check it out?
I know that the overwhelming majority of the denial reports that come out of NICS are false positives.
Yeah.
Usually not for something like this where someone has something that was erroneously put in. Usually it's because someone shares a common name and date of birth with someone else.
Yeah, John Smith, you know.
Right.
January 1st, you know, 1970. There's probably a whole bunch of them, you know, yeah.
Which is why you see so few actual prosecutions of someone for attempting to purchase a firearm when they're a prohibited person. You hear lots of statistics from the anti-gun group saying, you know, all of these prohibited persons were denied and we saved all these people from getting guns. What they don't tell you is the vast majority of the statistic that they provide to you were actually false positives, and that person actually wasn't prohibited and eventually was able to purchase the firearm. It just delayed them, you know, for days, weeks, months, sometimes years as they were trying to get it fixed.
And what if that's, you know, the single, you know, 19-year-old mom, you know, and she needs a gun right now for her ex-stalker, you know, and they're willing to have been killed in that situation.
Exactly.
For gun delays, you know, so prevention's the best, you know, get it early and often when it comes to guns, so you don't have to be in that position. But even so, you know, anybody can get caught up in this so-called justice system, And it should be up to them to prove. You know, you're innocent until proven guilty. You know, you're able to buy guns until you're proven you can't be. And even then, I'm suspicious of that, especially with these mental health claims. And I don't know where the line is. And we've talked about this before. You know, at what point do you say, you know, I think it really comes down to some of the actions, like this most recent, you know, assassin in the schools who brought a gun. I think he's going to be tried as an adult. I'm sure he'll never see the light of day again, which is good. Was that 15-year-old kid? Took his father's recently purchased handgun, brought it to school, killed four students, and I think tried to kill as many others as he could. But apparently he made a lot of stuff on Facebook the night before, or you know, people knew about it. If you're declaring a threat, that's a different thing than saying, well, we think he might be mentally unstable. So I have no problem going after people, especially if they're public actions. And most of these assassins, they actually do that because they want the recognition. They're doing it to immortalize their name and be famous forever. You know, or whatever reason it's going on, but give me some law enforcement background here. What, where do you draw the line between, you know, someone that you think might have a mental illness and come under a red flag law, as opposed to someone who obviously, you know, posts that what they're going to do? I mean, that to me, that's where the line is, as opposed to made up, you know, mental conditions versus actual demonstrated threat.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're posting something saying that you're going to do that, in most states, there is a law that is usually called something like communicating a threat. So,
okay, that makes sense.
So if you put communication out there and you threaten someone and you reasonably have the capability to follow through on that threat, then usually mm-hmm. You've committed a crime and you can be arrested. You know, it's not as simple as just making the threat because, you know, if you did that, then every comedian, you know, would be thrown in jail because, you know, comedy, people communicate threats sometimes in comedy and there's no reasonable expectation that they're going to carry it out. So, you know, if you're on Facebook, though, and you're a student at a high school and you post a picture of a firearm and say, hey, I'm going to go shoot up the school this week. That's communicated a threat, and you should probably be arrested.
Yeah. Or at least investigate it heavily. And it doesn't have to be a social media threat. It can be like, you know, if you're talking to your classmates or, you know, or someone at work and really discuss it, I hate this company. I could kill my boss. I hate this company. I can kill my boss. You say that enough times, you know, people go, that's a demonstrated threat. So now you're onto something. But if you just, you know, the limit thing is, my friend's a jerk. Yeah, I could kill him. You know, that's not a threat. But how about Madonna? Didn't she threaten to blow up the White House? who's that actor that everybody, Johnny Depp, didn't he threaten a presidential assassination? You know, how come they're not, you know, those are felonies right there. You know, so that to me is a communicated threat. I'm surprised they weren't, but they're celebrities, so I guess it's okay. Interesting.
Yeah, they have a different set of rules that apply to them. So, and while we're talking about celebrities, I found it also interesting that Alec Baldwin now is claiming that he never pulled the trigger on the pistol.
Yeah, that's like Clinton not inhaling. I smoked marijuana, but I didn't inhale. Oh, really? I almost had sex, but I didn't. Well, you know. Yeah, okay, fine. I heard about that. Now, I tried this with my revolver. You know, you can pull the hammer back almost to the cock position. If you let it go, it's going to let go. The safeties don't apply. If you, hence the expression going out half cocked from the single action revolvers, but you can pull the hammer back almost all the way, let it go. It's going to fire. And that's what he says. He pulled the hammer back, but he didn't pull the trigger.
It will be interesting to hear, you know, what comes of this, because I'm sure that the sheriff's department is looking at the firearm to see if it will fire without the trigger being pulled. And if he, like you said, if he did pull the hammer back, you know, to almost the locked position and let it go forward, that's the equivalent of pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what his claim is. I think his claim is that, you know, he didn't do anything like that. He just drew the firearm and it went off by itself. You know, interestingly, you know, he's a celebrity, and I'm sure that the district attorney is probably looking for ways to not charge him, and he's just digging himself a bigger hole by trying to, you know, put a positive spin out in public.
Well, he admitted he pulled the hammer back, idiot.
Right. So he's painting himself into a corner where the state's attorney is probably going to have no choice but to charge him.
Gee, what a shame. Yeah. Donnie's on the line. Chappie's on the line. He's a little bit early, but I wanted to bring him on the conversation anyway, because I know you're going to have something to say about this too. So competition, you know, you can't pull the hammer back partway in competition. You don't, your revolvers, unless it's single action, even then it has to be pointed downrange and you got rules and things like that. Basic gun safety. Chappie, what do you think?
That's correct. Yep. Basic safety. That's just kind of not funny in a bad way, but Alec Baldwin kind of blaming the gun instead of blaming responsibility on himself, just like what half of Hollywood does. So it's pretty tragic.
Well, it's interesting that Hollywood's so dependent on guns for their entertainment dollar, you know, and yet they're the ones who definitely want to ban them. I mean, most Hollywood acts have concealed carry permits awarded by the county sheriff in Los Angeles County. Which includes Hollywood, and yet, you know, they're the first ones to ban ones, and they're probably the most ignorant about it. I mean, Alec Baldwin's, you know, his arrogance and his ignorance exceed all known human limitation.
Well, you know, most of them say they're anti-gun, but yet they make money off their movies, you know, utilize gun or these action movies. So, you know, I feel if they're going to say that, then guess what? Don't do any movies and make money that have firearms, if that's how you feel. So
yeah. Well, I would extend it further to, you know, if you're going to make movies like The Hunger Games and make, you know, billions of dollars, you know, profit off individuals defying the, you know, tyrannical state, don't be supporting the tyrannical state. I would go that far, but that's just me. You know, I wouldn't make a law, but I just include that in. Gene, you want to weigh in on this a little bit?
Well, I was just going to say he's the reason, or one of the reasons why I think people want to have gun laws, because the thing is they think that people aren't honest when they use a gun. Well, he wasn't honest. I mean, to say that he didn't pull the trigger, he's the one that had the gun.
Yeah. Jim?
Yeah.
Legal perspective?
I really think that he has stepped away from the legal side of things, and now it's all a publicity and image kind of thing for him. So he is going to go out and swear that he never pulled the trigger, and he's going to take the classic anti-gun stance that it wasn't his fault, it's the gun's fault. And
the thing is, people were there that saw him pull the trigger.
Yeah,
so where's his credibility? He has none.
It's going to end up really badly for him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that his lawyer probably grabbed him and said, you need to stop making statements like this. Because,
out there now.
You know, this is going to come up in your trial, and you're going to end up having to take the stand now and explain this away. And I'm sure that the last thing they want is to put him on the stand in a trial. But now they're painting themselves into a corner where they're going to have to.
Right.
Hmm. I was curious, Jim, do you know if Hollywood movie production sets in California, where they have a 10-round magazine ban, they have movies using fully automatic weapons all the time. You know, granted, they're using blanks, obviously, but they still have, you know, fully automatic weapons. They have, you know, over 10-round magazines. You know, in fact, those guns never seem to need reloading. It's really fascinating. But how come, you know, are they exempt from the California magazine law? Even though they're Hollywood?
I don't know, but I would not be surprised if they were exempt. You know, the television and movie industry is exempt from many, many laws in California, so it would not surprise me if they're exempt from that as well.
That's interesting. Not surprised, you know, myself, you know. Okay. We got a couple more minutes here. If you have more stuff, we'll bring Chappie in the conversation.
Sure, I'll do one more.
Just since
we're talking about, you know, how people are pushing an anti-gun slant on things like the Alec Baldwin case, where now they're blaming the gun rather than the person. Mm-hmm. There's a case earlier this week outside of Atlanta in Douglas County where a 13-year-old boy was selling a firearm to someone and got into an argument. It was an adult, I guess, who was going to buy this firearm. got into an argument with the adult and shot and killed his 14-year-old sister who was there with him. And so now the sheriff is making the claim, either the sheriff or the district attorney, I can't remember which one, is making the claim that this 13-year-old was supposedly buying parts and assembling and selling ghost guns or unserialized firearms on the street. I find that very, very difficult to believe unless he was assisted by his parents, because to get an unserialized lower, it's going to be a block of metal, and you have to have some pretty good machining skills to be able to turn that into a firearm that will actually work. So it sounds to me like you have an anti-gun sheriff who's trying to put a narrative out of these things are dangerous and we need to have laws in place to stop them, because I can't imagine a 13-year-old having the equipment or the skills to be able to take a block of metal and turn it into a firearm.
Okay, so I'm not quite sure what's going on, because you've got a 13-year-old. First of all, why would a 13-year-old have a firearm to begin with? Why would an adult buy a firearm from a 13-year-old? You know, why wasn't that adult charged, with all kinds of, solicitation stuff, or contributing to the delinquency of a minor? I mean, I don't know. What did you charge someone like that? But so what they're saying is the kid, had to have access to illegal firearms, because he couldn't have made one on his own. Or what?
The adult who was buying it, and he was, when I say adult, it's loosely an adult. He was a 19-year-old.
Okay, all right. Yes.
But he was also arrested, and he has actually been charged with murder as well. Because he was attempting to illegally buy a firearm when this shooting occurred. So, he was engaged in the legal activity that led to the death of this young lady. So, the boy who fired the gun, his brother who was there assisting him in trying to sell the gun illegally, and the guy who was attempting to buy the firearm illegally have all been charged.
What was his sister doing there? I mean, that sounds like the real tragedy here.
Yeah, apparently she just went with him when he was doing this sale. Don't know why the sister and the brother went. I don't know if they just happened to be, all of them were together, and maybe they were talking to this 19-year-old, and the 13-year-old said, "Hey, I have a gun if you want to buy it." I don't know how the whole thing worked out.
I would think most criminal 19-year-olds would just steal it from the 13-year-old. Was there a struggle, and that's what happened? Or we don't know.
Well, and that's kind of what happened, is the 19-year-old decided he wasn't going to pay for it. And then the 13-year-old fired to shoot at him and ended up shooting his sister instead.
Okay, I'd have to see a diagram of where everybody was standing, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I would think the sister would be beside the brother at the time, but interesting.
Well, I mean, probably a 13-year-old who doesn't have a lot of experience with firearms, didn't know what he was doing, pulled the trigger really quickly as he was trying to draw it, and never even got the firearm actually on target.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Would be my guess,
Yeah, I imagine that happens in a lot of self-defense scenarios, which we can sort of segue into Chappie here. Jimmy, can you hang around for a bit, or do you have to go?
No, I'm gonna have to run, but you're actually correct. There's an awful lot of rounds that actually get fired into the ground in self-defense situations, because people tend to try to pull the trigger as quickly as possible and oftentimes fire the first round before they're on target and it goes into the ground.
Yeah, don't put your finger on the trigger until, all these little things. So there's rules and reasons for that. One more question just to sort of leave
you. Jim,
go ahead, Chappie. Yeah,
actually, Jim, before you go, did you hear about California's law they passed, I guess, this week about the ghost ban guns, or the ban on the ghost guns?
I've heard about it. I haven't read any of the details on it. So, until I actually read what it says, don't have a whole lot to say other than it's kind of ridiculous. People have been making firearms for years. There's no reason why someone shouldn't be able to make their own firearm.
Yeah, it looks like, of course, Los Angeles City Council, you know, voted on it, and this affects people like me as manufacturers before, because there are certain companies out there that do make the 80% lowers that can, and people like me with the FFL 07 can manufacture. Well, now, previous to this ban, California also did a ban on the 80% lower sales. So now it's affecting everybody, because then now everything has to be serialized in California before they can even sell any type of lower. So they're just making it, you know, it's actually unconstitutional. They're just making it harder for everybody to have the right to a firearm, the right to manufacture a firearm. So I was just wondering if you heard it. Yeah, because you're right. It just came out a couple of days ago. But I was just wondering if you heard anything else about it too. So,
well, unfortunately, Jim had to leave us. So he's no longer. Yeah. He had to hang up, but that's okay. And then Jim Dykes is the director of Florida Carry. I wanted to ask him about something that I'm hoping Florida Carry gets involved with, and something you can, you will as well. Maybe we can follow up on this issue too, because California is always a fascinating place of communist gun control. But I want to do something. I call it the Second Amendment open carry sock hop barbecue. those they make, as long as you conceal your firearm, you can carry it openly, but you have to put something over it so you're actually hiding your firearm. Right? You see these little gun socks? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and some of them actually have a picture of the gun that's under the sock. So I mean, you couldn't be any more obvious. So it's a very in your face. Yes, I'm complying with the law, but here's the picture of the gun that's under the sock that you know is a gun anyway, because it's shaped like a gun sitting here on my hip in a holster. And so what I'm hoping to do is to get some folks around here, maybe like Santa Rosa Volunteers, you. Some of the other gun folks around here into sort of like a big Second Amendment barbecue where we have a sock hop where we all carry openly with those socks with a picture of our gun underneath it. And so this is you can think about it, you know, chat off air, or you can tell me now, you know, what you might think of something like that. But I think it'd be a great, you know, it's like just shy of civil disobedience, because it's not illegal, but you know, we're obviously making a point that the not to have open carry is kind of ridiculous. Is this something you'd be interested in being involved with, or talk to your friends in the, in the gun biz?
Yeah,
okay,
possibly.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's do that. Let's sort of aim for when the weather gets a little bit warmer. So I'm thinking, coming this December, so like maybe like a March kind of thing, maybe March, April, somewhere in there might be kind of fun to do, especially as people getting back into shooting. But anyway, so Jim, Florida Carry is a great group, and I want to do more and more with them. This should actually be able to go to the conference they have every year. So California, any more on that, and the aspect of not being able to build a gun or not have a receiver with a number? None of this stuff makes any sense to me, because until you actually commit a crime, you should be able to do anything you want. But you know, if you build a gun badly, that's kind of on you. You know, I'm sure there's safety standards and manuals and ways to put it together and make sure that you're lower. We should explain what a lower is too, because a lot of people, you know, we use a lot of language here, and especially because we have foreign listeners too. What if you're making your own gun? How would you go about that? And what's a lower for those of you that don't know?
Well, it depends on which part of the receiver type of gun. But let's just talk AR-15. So the lower receiver, two halves. There's the upper half and there's the lower half. The lower.
And what's
half,
a receiver? Let's really get to basics. What's a receiver?
Yeah. Yeah, so the lower half, which is known, air quotes, as a receiver, just to use just common terms here, is where the magazine gets inserted, is where typically the grip is at, is attached to the trigger, and that has the trigger mechanism. So under ATF law, that's what's considered the firearm itself, because it has the trigger mechanism. The upper on the AR-15 is going to have your bolt carrier group, which in turn it holds its striker pin. Mm-hmm. And it's going to have your barrel, your gas tube, and your muzzle, and your handguard. But the lower, since per ATF rules, it's the part of the firearm that has the trigger mechanism, is considered a firearm, and that part has to be serialized. And it has to be transferred from an FFL to a person using ATF 4473. Now, when you purchase an 80% lower, as you hear people talk about, it's basically a block of metal that you can buy a jig, which takes forever, with a drill, or someone like me who manufactures it with a CNC, which is kind of a point to bring up today, is that I started manufacturing my own brand of AR-15 lowers this past week. So when Jim was talking about, you know, how that kid's manufacturing something easy, it's not an easy task to do unless you have the CNC skills or the machine and all this other stuff. So
let's give you a round of applause for that.
Yeah.
Helping the firearm community out there. I love it. I want to see one. I may talk to you about an AR-15. It's
actually,
and
I sent it to your Facebook Messenger, a picture of the upper lower I made the other day. So now I just have to finish. I'm designing right now the engraving, you know, with my logo. And, of course, I have to meet the ATF requirements, how deep it has the logo has to go, you know, who the manufacturer is, and town and state, which
that's
is me.
That's pretty.
The serial number.
Post
so,
in the gun group, the Action Radio gun group, so everybody can see. That's interesting. Yeah, okay.
So it came out really well. So, and of course, now it's kind of bad, too, because how raw materials have gone up. So, you know, it's just the trickle effect going down and everything.
Right.
But that bottom part, though, that's what's considered the receiver. And now that it's milled out and everything, now it's a firearm for the ATF.
Okay.
Before that, it was just a paperweight. So.
So what did people do before this ATF, you know, distinction? How long has this been around? I mean, the AR-15's been out for what, since the 70s? I'm guessing when it was derived from the M16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they have an ATF then? So, did they have all these stupid rules and regulations and things, or no?
Yeah, so it started, I think, all back in Capone's day with the automatic weapons, with the NFA ban and all that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But I can't remember the name of the movie because it kind of makes you feel like how America should be again, where I think Kevin Costner's in it, and he's a cop, and he goes into this gun shop, and he's asking to buy all these firearms, and they're all semi-automatics and all automatics, and he didn't have to fill one piece of paperwork to buy it, and they didn't have to call the FBI. They just sold it to him, and that's how, you know, it should be today. You know,
yeah,
again,
of course it should.
Second Amendment, right?
Well, we do have a bill. Actually, I had a bill to change the whole background check procedure so that the prohibited people are on the computer, not everybody. So if you present your driver's license with your photo ID or some government photo ID and your name on it, you know, to your FFL person, that'd be you, with your federal firearms license, you check it against, you know, the prohibited list. If the person isn't on the prohibited list, you've actually done a background check. There's no record of it because there doesn't have to be, because, you know, in fact, that's one of the big problems now. I heard that the Brandon insurrection is registering millions of gun owners illegally. I don't know if you heard about that, but my check, in fact, before he retired, Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt, was actually on my show back at WBY. He loved this idea. It's very simple. And the state's responsible for the prohibited list. If they screw up, you know, then they screw up. But you're not going to get someone, you know, being denied a gun because they screwed up and got a false positive, which apparently, according to Jim, most of them are false positives when they flag somebody for not being able to buy a gun. But if you got the prohibited person list right there, would you be in favor of something like that? You take the driver's license, you see their picture, you see the person there. So that way, if the names are the same, and even if the birthdays are the same, the pictures aren't going to be the same. So
yeah,
that is a check.
Yeah, I agree.
That is a check, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's kind of back, you know, remember back in the day, you go to the grocery store and have a picture of somebody that says, do not accept the check from this person.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, but, I remember Jim talking, you guys were talking about that, too, where, yeah, most of the denials are false denials because of typically things like the same name, birthday. Even I've seen it where people are even born in the same town. So that's why I recommend for people that have like the common names and everything, you know, on ATF form 4473, which everybody always asks, question number 17 for your unique personal identification number, UPIN. I recommend somebody get that, because everybody asks like, what's that number? I'm like, you don't know, you don't have one. But for people that have, let's say, incident in the past or something that's been dropped or whatever, but it's still floating around in the system, or they have a common, common name or social security number or birthdate or whatever, to get this unique PIN number, because then that, what that does, it scrubs it even further so that
it's John Smith
from such and such. This is actually not the John Smith with the same birthday from somewhere else, USA, that had the criminal record. So
yeah, John Smith from New York, you know, where they're all restricted anyway. Yeah, yeah, that's interesting.
So,
okay.
And then stuff like that can kind of stop the, you know, it being prolonged or getting you down this path of you being falsely accused that you're a criminal when you're not, when you have this unique identification number. Because they just do a little bit more investigation and confirmation that it's you, and then that number is unique to you, and it kind of sets you apart from the other John Smith. So
yeah, see, there's only one Greg Penglis in the country, as far as I know, and it's me. So I'm easily identified. You know, you want to find me, just look me up. I mean, there's like four pages of Google on me, so you know, it's not hard to find. This is why I don't worry about, you know, privacy, because I lost mine a while ago, so that's easy. All right, what's going on in the competition world and gun tech and any new developments? What's happening out there?
Well, yeah, so it's been a while since we had Thanksgiving last week. But the weekend before that, we had the big all eight level two steel competition match that was held here in Holt, Florida at Element Training Complex. Great match. We had a lot of the big shooters who are famous in the shooting steel challenge community, such as Steve Foster, our local Gatlin Johnson, and everything. It was a great match. A lot of people showed up. A lot of guns were there being fired. Great match overall. And they're looking forward to doing it next year, and I think we're going to have a lot more people coming next year. A lot of people that never been to this area absolutely loved it. You know, they went and checked out the beach here in Navarre. They checked out, also, too, I kept bringing donuts from Milton Bakery, so it's kind of a little shameless plug for Milton Bakery. So
hey, they're good. If they want to sponsor my show, next time you can ask them if they want to sponsor Action Radio. So you're welcome to mention any company you want, as long as you ask them.
They are pro to gun over there, too.
Well, why don't you bring them on the show sometime? Let's talk donuts. I'm serious.
Yeah.
You know, if you're buds, then feel free.
Yeah. So everybody, you know, love the local area. They love the range because, you know, and this was the first year for this match. So people are kind of hesitant, but next year and the years after, I think it's going to grow each year after that.
So that's wonderful.
I was one of the sponsors. I sponsored a stage, Smoke and Hope, which is the fastest stage of shooting. So you have
Smoke
people
and
shoot
Hope.
And like,
is that
yeah.
What
you
call it?
So
smoke
it's
and hope?
Usually people smoke, you know, people shoot that stage at five targets in like 1 second, something.
Oh,
so they're shooting it under 2 seconds. It's super fast.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a great match. You know, like I said, a lot of other sponsors, a lot of giveaways. All the staff that volunteered did a great job. And then last weekend, we had the Precision 22 match, which was great because it wasn't windy for once. So everybody was able to maintain their zero, you know, shooting a nickel-sized target. Tomorrow,
at what range? What range are they shooting this nickel-sized target?
The precision target. So the precision match is held at Escambia River Gun Club in Cantonment, which is my home range. It's typically held the last Saturday of the month, but for December, since Christmas is going to be the last Saturday, we're having December is actually this coming Sunday. So we're doing back-to-back matches. And hopefully the weather holds up. So that will be on Sunday, the Precision 22 match. That's a sanctioned American Rimfire Association match, which is the only one in this area, in the southern region here, so within Alabama.
So what range, though? How far away are these nickel-sized targets you're shooting with a 22?
50 yards.
Oh, Jesus. That's what I wanted to get. I don't think people realize.
The closer you get to that center bullseye, the higher point factor you're going to get. So these targets go into basically a Scantron. That's how, you know, to determine the winner is like who's closer to hitting each of their targets to that bullseye determines the point. So it's all done electronically, so it's not, you know, biased or anything else. And
So I'm guessing these are what they call bench rests. In other words, they got their gun resting on a bench.
Yeah, so
and they've got the barrels like what, 4 inches thick,
well,
you know, and the scope is like, you know, 2 feet long. What kind of guns are these? These aren't your regular 22s they're using, right?
Well, factory and unlimited. So factory has to be under, I believe, 1,200 MRSP.
What's
you
that?
Can't
oh, the price?
The price.
Okay.
It has, or it has to be on their approved list. So there's a lot of them by CZ that are on the approved list that might be like close to that price or whatever. Or it might be an older gun that you can't find MRSP anymore. So they're like, okay, that gun's approved. But you can't make any modifications to it other than trigger work. You can bed the rifle so that, you know, it doesn't, there's no wiggle room or anything else like that. You can't put a muzzle. As far as the bench rest goes, you can only have a two-piece bench rest. So you can have something supporting the front and then bracing the back. That's it.
So you can't lock it down. You know,
you
do all these crazy things that,
yeah.
like a testing, yeah. You know. Okay, all right. But these are still
now,
pretty complex 22s. You know, I think of a 22 as like a little target pistol. You know, like you're Browning, you know, 4 to 6 inch barrel, a length barrel, 22, you know, 10 in the mag, 15 in the mag, whatever. That to me is a 22, or like a Ruger 10/22, which is a very basic semi-auto 10 round rotary magazine. I mean, that's what I taught my daughter to shoot on. You know, nice, easy gun, no recoil. You know, it's quiet enough. You know, you get the I still use foam earplugs and the headset, but yeah. But these guns, this is an entire, this is like, you know, 5G is as to the rotary phone dial, right? these are quite an improvement.
Exactly. Well,
the
next guns would be considered by 10G. So they're considered, it's called unlimited division. So now you're shooting, you're almost shooting a dime size target. Now, these guns, you can do any modification you want. You can do a one-piece rest. These guns are amazing because you'll basically look at the person, they'll sit there and dial up the rest to move, and then they barely even touch the trigger with their gun. Their cheek isn't on the buttstock or anything, and they just pull the trigger, and you just see the kind of gun recoil and slide back a little bit. They put it back on target. It's almost, to me, not really shooting in the unlimited division, but they're shooting a dime-sized target.
I'm surprised they don't have like a gyro stabilizer, you know, or GPS, you know, coordinate site, and have your temperature and pressure. You got a barometer and a thermometer and a little wind indicator. You know, built in. I mean,
yeah,
this
you
is,
will see
what?
Wind flags everywhere out there too. So you'll see wind flags at 25, and then you'll see, I usually put up like a little streamer by the target because it's amazing how much the wind changes even at 50 yards. And then of course, at 22 being so light, just a little bit, even pulling the trigger will move that bullet, you know, left, right, up and down, or way off target. So
it
kind of
touches that,
still, you know.
Yeah, bullets move through the air, folks, and if the air is moving, the bullet moves in the air that's moving. Okay, so if the air is moving at 20 miles an hour, the bullet's going to move with the air at 20 miles an hour. Just whatever direction you fire it, it's going to move with the air. So the longer the time it's in flight, the longer it's going to move. And I learned that when I did 1,000-yard competitions, you know, with 30-06, 190-grain Sierra hollow point bow tail, which, you know, and I made my own rounds, and it was fabulous. But yeah, that bullet was flying for like a second and a half. Okay, so you can do the math, right? So 20 miles an hour, how much distance is 20 is air going to move in a second and a half if it's moving 20 miles an hour? Well, it's a bunch of feet. It's like 12
There's
feet
a bunch, yeah.
You know, or something ridiculous.
And then you throw in other things, you know, too, like humidity and all the other stuff that you know, everything factors into it. So
it's fascinating.
What we like about this, you know, is, you know, it's definitely trigger control, your breathing, you know, your basic skills of shooting, but it tests you. It'll test your patience too, because everybody's thinking, oh, 50 yards, I'm shooting at 22. But then you start bringing it down to shooting a nickel, and then within that nickel, the bullseye. It's some stiff competition out there, and it's
one thing
about
100 yards.
Math.
Make it 100 yards. Make it a real competition.
Well, this is ARA sanctioned that, so this is according to
the rules. I know the rules. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, you might as
well
put a quarter at 100
do.
Yards. I mean,
there
make it more
some
interesting.
There's some other disciplines that add as well as 100 yards, but it will definitely test your patience, like I said, and then the weather, because you're always looking at the weather that day, like, please do not be windy. Then you get out there, and you can kind of tell too when the wind's coming, because you don't hear any gun on the line fire. You just see everybody. As soon as the wind flag drops, you see everybody back to target. So.
Yeah. So this is for the nerds, okay? So you nerds out there that don't think you don't want to be a cowboy action shooter, okay? Because you don't think you look good enough, you don't have the mustache for it, okay? You can be a 22, you know, unlimited person, and you can dork out your rifle with as many different accoutrements, you know, and you can carry your handheld wind. I've seen these, okay? Handheld wind indicators,
yeah,
and you know, temperature barometer, yeah, all that stuff, yeah. So there's places for nerds in shooting, okay? So it's not just for, you know, the overly macho crazy types. Hey, Gene, what do you think? I want to get Gene interested in competition at some time, just to, as an intro to even shooting, you know, like especially someone new. It's a great way to learn. Gene, do you find this intriguing at all, or are various aspects of competition?
Yeah, I do. I may have to try it one day, yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, anyway.
Well, come on out. We have plenty of firearms.
My coordination isn't that good, but, you know, if it's a big target, maybe it'll be all right.
Well, come on out. We'll set you up. You know, there's plenty of people to help you willing to get in the competition and also help you set up for the 22. So if you don't have one, there's plenty of people to have that are willing to help and share, you know, just to promote the community. So
it's such a fabulous group of people, too, you know. But I want to. So we only have about 4 minutes left. I want to go back to sort of the Alec Baldwin thing that people.
Yeah.
The beauty of competition for me was the procedures, the discipline. You know, I love the camaraderie. I love everything else. But just for me on a personal level, the ability to learn far more about firearms than I think I ever would any other way. You know, short of actual, you know, emergency situations, which you don't want, you know, but I think competition is the closest you can get, especially like IDPA, where you're drawing from cover, you know, where you're using a concealed handgun, you know, you're getting as close to a realistic defense scenario as you can. You still feel the pressure. I mean, obviously not as much as a life-threatening situation, but, you know, you're close enough so you can get an idea of how stressed you're going to be maybe in a life-threatening situation. But competition, the discipline, the repetition, and once you see the stupid mistakes you make that you can make, you know, on a range, and people are like, ah, don't do that, you know, stop right there, you know, you didn't clear your gun properly, or you didn't, you know, you had your finger on the trigger way before the gun was on target. Little things that you'd never think you do, that you think, oh, I'm safe, I've done this before, I've practiced 1,000 times on the range, I'm perfectly safe, and all of a sudden people are watching, and it's like, and they're not there to criticize, you know, obviously it's safety first, but what I'm saying is the things, just the little things that can make a huge difference. When Jim was talking about, you know, many self-defense rounds end up on the ground because people are pulling the trigger way too fast, you know, that kind of thing. Competition is a great way to bring some of the discipline, what they call the muscle memory, the automatic reflex actions, the things that you need to do without thinking, you know, and any sport has, especially a sport that can be potentially dangerous if you do it badly. Mine would be flying, sailing, shooting. You know, I don't think there's too much danger playing guitar, at least not yet. And they all have the common thing of the zone. You get in your zone. This is, you know, my outlet is guitar playing right now. I'm going to start flying again. I've been, you know, there's some beautiful new experimental aircraft coming out of Europe that are not too, well, they're like a couple $100,000, but they got a Rotax engine. They're cheap. They run on car gas. They burn like 5 gallons an hour and do over 200 miles an hour. So there's really cool things coming out in aviation, yeah. So I'll get you flying. You get me shooting. We'll trade skills. We'll have some fun.
Absolutely.
Do you find that?
But you didn't
go ahead.
You did mention, of course, safety and everything in the muscle memory, and that's the great part about IDPA and USPSA, you know, because there's a thing called the safe table once you get there to ensure that your gun's safe before you holster it. And it's stressed there's a live ammunition at the safe table because you'll get disqualified. Again, when you go up to the shooting line, you know, you have to load, and when you rack it back, the range safety officer ensures that it's safe and everything before you holster. And then at the end of the course of fire, again, unload, show clear, you know, and it's checked and verified before you holster. Again, so there's a lot of safety measures put in to competition shooting. We're not just a bunch of cowboys running around with our guns loaded and everything else. And it's like you said, too, people aren't there to totally judge you if you do something wrong. They just want to ensure that you're safe, everybody else is safe, and that everybody is following the rules so that incidents like what happened with Alec Baldwin does not happen and you don't blame the gun. So,
well, have you seen that, though, where, I mean, I tried with one of my revolvers last night. I just pulled the hammer almost back to where it would be naturally cocked and just let it go. And, of course, it fired at me immediately. You know, it was empty. I mean, obviously, it was, you know, it was cleared and checked and out of my gun safe. But the point was that you know, you pull a hammer back, it's going to, if you don't, if it doesn't click into a locked position and you let it go, I mean, there's no difference between that. I mean, that's what the trigger does. It pulls the hammer back and then it gets to a point where it lets it go. It doesn't, the hammer never makes it to the full cocked position. Otherwise, it'd be fully cocked. It'd be locked back. Yep. So whether he touched the trigger or not is really irrelevant to this. And I thought about that and that starts, you know, testing my theory out. So as Jim says, he's really, you know, committed, he's really confessed, you know, to at least manslaughter. You know, just by saying, "Well, I pulled the hammer back, but I didn't touch the trigger." Okay, dude, let's show you how this works in front of a jury. It's going to be very interesting to see. All right, got about 25 seconds left. Contact information, your business. You know, when your AR-15s are going to be ready for me to come take a look at. You know, let me know, and then we'll do it again next week.
Oh yeah, so I can be reached at ChappieTactical@gmail.com. I'll also be reached on facebook.com/ChappieTactical and on Instagram at ChappieTactical. My custom-made AR-15 Chappie Tactical brand AR lowers should start going in full spec manufacturing in January, price on sale come February, and that includes AR-9 lowers. So those who want an AR-15 type firearm but want to shoot 9mm, I'm making those as well.
Can you make it one that converts so you can do both, or is that a little out of the question?
Yes, you can actually. There's you just
different
have to
upper
swap
or something.
The upper. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Right. Interesting. All right. Good things to know. All right, sir. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks to everybody for this week. It's been. Go back to the shows, everybody. We had some incredible conversations on a bunch of diverse areas, sometimes funny, sometimes tragic, sometimes serious, sometimes completely off the wall. That's what we do here at Action Radio. So we'll do it again Monday starting at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and Hawaii. Just set your alarm for the middle of the night. Thank you, everybody. Actually, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our brand new website, which should be out anytime in the next couple of days, writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOUR. LAWS, writeyourlaws.com, our new and improved site with which we are going to change the laws of this country by having the citizens write the laws that you consent to be governed by. I'll be back next week.
Have a great day.
Have a great weekend.
Bye, Chappie.